you're not going to have a public comment afterwards. So Benioff did not see the cards that should be available up front. Please grab one and pass it up front. The public comments limited to 3 minutes per speaker. So we'll start off, Mr. Steve Ludwig.
Yes, sir. May I stay seated?
If you so choose, we'd probably prefer to have you up. But,
okay. If you decide to submit or release request for proposal to run a city, I'd like to suggest that you request this to run each part of it. And then, sort of like when my uncle sold his farm, he divided 160 acres into 20 parcels. At the auction, 20 people bought the parcels, and then at the end, you auction the whole thing off, and if the whole price beat the small ones, then the final bidder got the whole thing. So I'd like to suggest that you consider bidding out all or asking questions proposal on all the small parts of the city, and then, like, who wants to run the whole thing, and then maybe a hybrid bid. Give everybody a chance to come in and kind of lay on the table what they want to lay on the table. And I also understand that we're in negotiations to buy the parks. But, you know, I think the city ought to, or the county ought to give us the parks. We shouldn't have to pay for them because there's such a huge drain on the city, on the county and city resources, ultimately. And we'd still get to use them. It'd be the county's parks, but we get to use them. And besides that, Dan Weber told me a while back that if Senate Bill 83 didn't pass last time, this is before it came up for the vote, it did not pass in the House, that he was going to resubmit it. And if he does and it succeeds this time, I get it all pretty much for free. And then finally, the agenda says that you're going to start considering proposals for city attorney, but the only advertisement I saw for that position was on the Citizens for Gunbody website, and it said submit your resumes and proposals. And it may have been elsewhere and broader than that, but if all you say is give us your resume to be city attorney, you're not really given any guidelines. Here's what we expect of you, so you know a lot of bidders can say, I'm interested or I'm not. So I would like to suggest that you have some kind of guideline saying here's what we want to pay, or at least tell us what you want, but here's the kind of work that we expect out of you. And then also I'd like you to put it on the website somewhere for people who apply, because there's a lot of people out in Dunwoody that might know people who are applying for not only the city attorney's position, but for other positions that have information on applicants that could be useful to you. And besides that, I know you want to hear what's happening.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Bob Pascella.
The record is Pascella.
Pascella. Thank you. I should know that by now.
All right, I've got three items here. First, this one basically is a summation of an email that came to me and I think was distributed to many residents of Dunwoody. The council talks about transparency and integrity. We had better make sure that is the case. While Don Boykin is one of Dunwoody's finest citizens and should be applauded for everything that he's done for the community, have we really vetted him? What I think, and I think Don might agree, before Boykin International is hired, the company needs to be properly vetted. This company needs to go through the same formal bid process that CH2M filled did. Then and only then should he be hired. One of the reasons we became a city was to rid ourselves of the cronyism of Decatur County. Let's make sure that we have hired the best possible candidate. Second item, according to the city charter, the mayor appoints the city manager and the council confirms. My understanding is this past week, three finalists were interviewed by the mayor, as well as interviewed by selected others, but not a single council person was present. My question is, why? How can the council properly confirm, if not part of the interview process? Hopefully, the candidates were at some point in time made available to the council. And finally, this has nothing to do with council business, but I'm tired of getting phone calls, including from council members, and it concerns the District 2 runoff and the mudslinging going around, and quite frankly, it's disgusting. But there's more than one person that needs to go home tonight, look themselves in the mirror, and say, what could I have done to prevent this? Because it could have been prevented. I was lucky. When I was a kid, my parents taught me right from wrong. Some people are having to learn the hard way. Well, you want to be a leader? Act like one.
Thank you, Bob. Charles Auslander.
Yes, sir. I'm Gerald Rosslander. I'm a Dunwoody resident of the past 25 years. I was on the courts committee, and I was also on a committee that accepted applications for the city attorney position. I am not here to speak for the committee. I'm here to speak for myself. In reviewing the applications and comparing it with court task force report, I noted that one of the proposals that we received, and I'm certain these people have a chance to speak to it later, was from the joint venture from Anderson and Ryland. I can go line item by line item if you'd like, but the court task force proposed salaries for the municipal judge, for the solicitors, and for the city attorney. If you added up those four salaries over a year's period of time, it comes to $213,200. If you look at the joint Anderson-Riley proposal, they're proposing to have the city pay them for the same four for three of the four positions the municipal judge would be paid for by the city, would come to $315,200, or $102,000 over the proposal by the city, by the committee, pardon me. Additionally, I, along with others, were present last Saturday for interviews of all of the applicants that were given interviews. Mr. Anderson made his presentation to the committee. During his presentation, he cited a Georgia Code section and indicated that the city attorney would have to be a resident of the city of Dunwoody. Following the meeting, we looked on the internet and found out that the code section that he cited did not pertain to the city attorney. Fran Millar, who was there for the meeting, contacted the committee the following week, indicating that the legislative council for the legislature also confirmed that the city attorney did not have to live within the city. Additionally, one of our committee members looked up the Georgia Code section under which city employees are hired. It specifically precluded municipalities from requiring city employees to live within the city. Now, I've been a judge for 28 years. I expect when lawyers come before me that they have a command of the law. Mr. Anderson did not have a command of the law that day. Thank you.
Thank you. Joe DeVita.
Yes, my name is Joe DeVita. I'm here today on behalf of the Dunwoody Chamber of Commerce. And I'm speaking on behalf of the alcohol beverage, Chapter 7, that is in consideration. And Chamber of Commerce is opposing this for a few simple reasons. Number one, Mr. Anderson approached us about 2 weeks ago to look into the potential impact of changing operating hours for establishments to serve alcohol. In our research, we have found that there is a significant impact on two of our local businesses and a marked impact on an industry. The reason why we are opposing this at this time, because this Chapter 7 became available to me today, and there's not really been enough time to make sure that we've had enough community input on this, and 3 minutes is kind of short. So I'll make it quick. We have two existing establishments that are running in good faith, operating until 4 a.m. Firebird's restaurant, clean establishment, no incidents of any problems with that establishment. And they serve food to the hospitality industry as a whole. So one of the things we ought to consider is what kind of message we're sending to the hospitality industry. This is an industry that we need their revenue for successful business. And secondly, we want to make sure we properly address the transition of business license applications in this very critical time. Sandy Springs used the method that forced all of our restaurants to reapply for a license rather than renew the license. And I just want you to consider that there are many things that we need to address, and getting this information out to the public the same day that it's being considered or within a day or two, and only allowing just a few minutes of public speaking time, right, is not enough time to have a fully vetted proposal. So I do recommend that you consider that you use a process that allows these restaurants to renew their license rather than reapply. And secondly, that we consider grandfathering in the two establishments that are operating very good and clean establishments up until 4 a.m.
Thank you, Jeff. Jim Gilmore?
Chili's.
Thank you, gentlemen. I own one of those establishments that he just spoke about. And I have a clean record. I'm involved in the community quite a bit. Just looking, citing from the crier, in my opinion, by Dunley, yes. Under number five, business community, businesses and citizens working together for a better Dunwoody of tomorrow. We strongly encourage the citizens of Dunwoody to patronize the businesses of Dunwoody. We encourage businesses to locate to Dunwoody. I am open till 4 a.m., six nights a week. 90% of the people I get are young people who work in the hospitality trade. I walk in, a good example, I walked in last night and they said, here comes Papa. I don't drink, I don't smoke, and they know I don't try to control things. I would have probably felt the way you did. I've been involved with youth for over 40 years, I still am. And we don't need that stuff. When you start shortening the time frame, and I've seen this happen over and over, when those kids get off, young people get off, I call them kids, they're over 21, but from 12:30 to 1 o'clock, they come in and say, you got 45 minutes, what do you want? They'd love to have two or three set up in front of them, that's against the law. When they've got plenty of time, they come in larger groups, and they drink much slower, and they eat a lot more food, because we have a kitchen that's open, and we serve food. It is not a problem, they have large groups. If somebody does tend to get out of hand, they have a group with them usually because they all work together to take care of them. And if not, I've got arrangements with the local hotels. I've got arrangements with cab companies. I'll bring two cabs. I'll take you home and I'll take your car home. But when you start cutting back that time frame, I would never have guessed this. It really rushes the attitude of the younger person. Don't impose that on. If you have objections, I'd like to know what they are. It's what you think the problem is. And I also have some comments that came. This is from a neighborhood newspaper. This is out of East Cobb. The mayor of Dunwoody says, we need to start closing early. Opposed to it are the city council and the police department. And they said they had numerous places that are open late, and they said, it's not a problem. They had one place that became a problem, and they said, and they closed them down because they cited several violations. You're not going to, you have so many little municipalities that won't fall under this. Shambly doesn't fall under it, City of Decatur, Johns Creek doesn't. Go talk to them and see what the hell is working for them. Ask them. Believe me, I've worked with kids all my life, and I still do, maybe some of your children. But it is not a problem. It really isn't. If it was, I'd be out of the darn business. And I'll tell you what, they put me at. But,
Jim, what was your establishment?
Yes, sir.
What was the name of your establishment?
Chili's,
which is located
at a restaurant and sports grill on Dunley Park. Between Shanley, Dunwoody, and Shell.
I'm aware. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you. It's on the card.
Thank you, Jim. Okay, next up, there aren't any additional comment cards I see flying around. We're going to move to item number two, which is presentation and discussion of proposals for city attorney position. I'm going to make some statements before I call up the three finalists. I think as most are aware here, fellow council folk, the way the charter is set is I can bring a city attorney to you for up or down vote. A few weeks back, as
things were being thrown at me, this was one of them that I needed to try and tackle. So I reached out to one of my close advisors, Ms. Wingate, and asked her for some assistance on how to go about finding the best city attorney. Certainly that's not an expertise of myself or a core competence, I'm free to admit. And Ms. Wingate came back and suggested that I reach out to the courts committee and have them conduct the search. So I thought that was a fantastic idea, and that's exactly what I did. Mr. Augustine, who had headed up the committee, was unable to chair it, and Mr. Wade McGuffey graciously stepped forward to chair this committee. So that committee reached out and advertised in various forms, means, and fashions, and asked for solicitations for the city attorney. I stayed out of the committee. I was not involved in the committee, and I did that on purpose. Again, I feel that this is not really my core competence as far as finding a city attorney. So what I was brought back with, it looked like there were 15 applications that committee had received. And on October 6th, Mr. McGuffey reported back that let me read you just an excerpt here. On Saturday, October 4th, 2008, we interviewed 6 applicants for the city attorney position. As we previously reported, we had 15 applications, and we narrowed it down to 6 to interview. Out of the 6, we recommend 3 as outstanding and highly qualified. And it goes on further to outline the 3 finalists that committee had chosen. And I had forwarded each of you that email with attached resumes. One of those finalists that the committee had chosen is our transition attorney and interim city attorney, Mr. Anderson and group. And so for that purpose, I definitely thought it was a good idea that all counsel hear from the 3 finalists, and then we certainly will break and plan to break on executive sessions to discuss going forward. I think it's probably the most appropriate thing to do, given that Mr. Anderson is one of the 3 finalists. So with that being said, and with that background, I would ask, I've asked each of them to prepare a 15-minute or so presentation, along with Q&A from any of you as they go along. So Ms. Goodman was first on the list. Hello, welcome.
I really appreciate you having me here this evening. My name is Jill Goodman. I am a resident of Dunwoody and have been for about 18 years now. I think I probably used up everything funny that I had when I met with the committee last week. So I'll just jump right in and tell you, I think what makes me really right for this job is not so much that I'm an accomplished attorney, not that I've been a city attorney, but I've been a county attorney. That I've got great negotiating skills, first-rate Ivy League education, all that. I think what sets me apart is that I know my client. I've been in Dunwoody for a long time. I know the neighborhoods. I know the history of the various businesses. I've witnessed the growth. I've read about a lot of disputes that have gone on. And I think that knowledge of Dunwoody combined with my experience and background, I'll know how to make the law work for my client. And everybody's probably got a to-do list of, what we've got to get rolling out first to get the city up and running. And obviously, service delivery strategy is probably number one right now. No matter what direction the city goes, it's going to involve some contracts, whether they're intergovernmental agreements with DeKalb, neighboring cities, with a private contractor. The last 3 years, I was general counsel for a technology company and almost exclusively was negotiating contracts, high dollar value, complex contracts for the likes of Cisco, Intel, Dell, Google, Microsoft. Considering that negotiations with Microsoft start with, do you want these documents in duplicate or triplicate? I think that when it comes to going toe-to-toe with Vernon Jones or anybody else that the city plans to do business with, I can take whatever they want to shout. It may not look very tough, but You know, I know how to fight through the boilerplate in a contract and protect my client's interests. Another thing, obviously, is ordinances. I know there's been some draft chapters already proposed and floating around, which I've seen on Mr. Hennigan's website, which I appreciate being made available, and that is a really great resource. One of the things I have done in my career is write an entire code of ordinances, top to bottom, from scratch. That was for City of Roswell. And obviously, you can do a cut-and-paste job and take a look at Sandy Springs, Johns Creek, you know, things that are upscale, you know, would be something that you like. But I sort of expanded my efforts and really came up with a method that was going to serve the needs of, you know, the community I was working for. And I know just in looking at some of these code sections, if I was selected city attorney, I would definitely be doing some redlining. I've actually had to litigate an alcohol beverage license that was denied, and it was on the basis that when they went to measure it, it was too close to a church. What was crazy about it was when you actually read that statute, and the one we're proposing has pretty much the same language, closest distance on the ground, front door, what does that mean? Which door is the front door of this church? There's like 13 doors. I don't know. You know, if the establishment has a big deck in front with 200 tables and they're serving alcohol out there, and the front door is back in the parking lot. You know, you really need to take a look at the purpose of your ordinance, you know, who you're trying to protect, what you're trying to accomplish. Make sure that it's clear. Make sure you know what you're enacting and that it's accomplishing that purpose. And since the city attorney is going to be solicitor, the worst thing in the world is to be in a court and have the judge say, Mrs. Goodman, what does this ordinance mean? And, you know, I can't answer it. Yeah, it's a mess. So believe me, I would have a vested interest in making sure that we get a good, solid code of ordinances. Now, obviously, you can roll over to CAD counties, but I think everyone would agree the reason we have City of Dunwoody is because we think that we can do it better. We're going to have some manuals to adopt, police procedures, HR manuals. I am familiar with both of those things. I spent about 3 years representing the Gwinnett County Police Department, Sheriff's Department. So I've done litigation on behalf of both of those entities, both sexual harassment, Title VII, Section 1983, ADA, as well as the pepper spraying and hog tying of an individual in a traffic accident, which resulted in his death. So I've definitely seen pretty much everything that would come up in municipal law at some point in time. So I do think that I've got the experience that Dunwoody would need. Mayor asked me to talk about my proposal a little bit, and it's a bit short on detail, I admit, because the request for proposal was also a bit short on detail. My experience is actually being employed by a city and a county full-time, where I had an office in City Hall and was available to the council, city manager, the department heads, the employees, as needed. And just from experience, I know that there was a constant stream of traffic in my office. Planners, building code inspector, code enforcement people, city manager. You know, there's a lot of questions that come up day to day in running a city and running a county. And I think especially since the city is going to be new, it's to your advantage to have an attorney that's available. You know, my proposal was sort of a flat fee retainer where, you know, I would be available for city business exclusively 25 hours a week. You know, once things get up and running, that number may fluctuate and, you know, everyone is happy and loves Dunwoody and there is no legal work anymore. But I guess my thought is just to have the availability and have the employees sort of know that, you know, if they've got a problem, they can go to somebody for some guidance, and it's much better to sort of do things right on the front end than have to litigate things on the back end. I am flexible and want to meet the needs of the committee. And until we get the court going, we really don't know the volume of cases that we're going to have. I'm not sure how aggressive the police department's going to be in traffic stops. I know DeKalb was on my street this morning trying to nail people. I do think that that's going to be something that's going to have to be looked at, you know, once we have a better idea of, how many services the city is going to provide for itself. If we have more employees, that's going to be more legal work, I would assume. If you're privatizing everything, I would assume probably less legal work and less issues once you get the initial contracts done and negotiated. Another thing I guess I assume is that the city would be insuring a road berm. I don't know if that's been discussed further or if that's going to happen or not. But what I had told the committee is that, you know, if you've got an employment case, you want the best employment lawyer you can get. If you've got a zoning case, you want the best zoning lawyer. If you've got some tax improvement district dispute with DeKalb, you know, you want somebody that's really up in that area of the law. And, you know, I've done a lot of areas of the law and claim to be an expert in a lot of things, but obviously not everything. So I think that it's also to the city's benefit to have flexibility in the budget when litigation comes up to, you know, bring in the smoking gun, bring in the big man. I know you had some concerns about a solo practitioner versus a law firm. I did speak to a colleague that has 5 years of prosecutorial experience, and she was interested in serving as a solicitor pro tem, as long as it doesn't interfere with her in practice. So I do think that I wouldn't have any problem covering those duties. The other thing I guess I would leave you with, as you know, I was able to offer you a very, I think, attractive hourly rate or retainer fee, because you're paying for my expertise. I don't have a lot of overhead, law firm secretary, expense systems, computers and whatnot. So I think, you know, you really are getting the benefit of my talents and not my abilities, and not some young associates or paralegals that I've got to bill a lot to feed. If you have any questions individually or as a council, either tonight or, you know, need some more information to make a decision, please call me at any time. I'll give a quote. You know, my number is on my resume. And just in closing, and I told you, I think one of the advantages I have is that I'm a resident of Dunwoody, and then my client. Another would be is that if I'm selected as a city attorney, Dunwoody would be my only client. My practice mostly lately has been in special education law. A lot of that is on a pro bono basis. I have a special needs child, and that's an interest of mine, and something that I've been fortunate to be able to do recently in helping families negotiate the school system, Medicaid, insurance appeals. And I'm just excited to be here tonight and part of Dunwoody. I know that no matter what decisions you make in the weeks to come, the city is in good hands, and I'm really looking forward to continuing to be part of the community. So if we've got time left for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Goodman. Councilman, you have any...
What county did you work for? You said you worked for as a county attorney.
I was in-house with Henry County, and then I did 3 years of work on behalf of Gwinnett County with a law firm located in Gwinnett.
And today you have no clients, you have no, this would be your sole occupation?
I mean, I do work for families, but it's, you know, 2 hours here, 2 hours there. Something that would interfere with any of my duties in the city.
Can you tell us a little bit about your educational background?
Sure. I'm a graduate of DeKalb County Public Schools. I went to Cornell University, majored in government. I came home, went to University of Georgia Law School, graduated cum laude, and was a member of the Georgia Law Review, which is the sort of premier glamour credential you can have as an attorney. And going forward, I've attended the annual City County Attorney's Conference in Athens, Georgia, probably 4 or 5 years. Bugga licked me one time when I was there. But generally, you know, I do tend to keep up with, you know, all areas of the law that I'm going. I've traveled to the United States Supreme Court to hear the Farragher case in oral argument because I had an employment law case going on at the time and just decided I needed to be there to see it happening. So, you know, I mean, I have a lot of passion for the law and what I do and take a lot of interest in it, and that's the level of commitment that I've always brought to my work.
Ms. Goodman, you said, you said you worked for a city also?
Yes, sir.
What city was it?
Roswell.
You said, were you a full-time employee at Roswell when you did that?
Yes, I was the first in-house city attorney that they had. And I was there when they were working on the big Beachside annexation. That was actually what I think paved the way for there to be a Dunwoody, because that led to the land grab in North Fulton and having a Johns Creek in Milton and then Sandy Springs, which sort of created a rolling effect that, you know, we now have the opportunity to be our own city. And, you know, while I was there, obviously we had a lot of service delivery strategies to stretch the boundaries of the city about 5 miles to the east, build a new police and fire station, just generally make sure that these new citizens were going to enjoy the same level of services that the existing residents of Roswell did.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate the time. Glad to have you out. Mr. Powell.
Hello. I'm Rex Powell. Thank you for having me here tonight. I lived in Dunwoody for quite some time, and I now live in DeKalb County. My children were educated in Dunwoody schools. I graduated from the University of North Carolina and Emory Law School. I've practiced law in Dunwoody for several years, and in Dunwoody and DeKalb County for 40 years. My office now is Office Spalding, about 12 minutes away. I do maintain an office with an assistant who's been with me for 17 years. I have an AB rating with the peer review, Martindale Double, which is means that I'm, in their language, highest level of professional excellence and competence. My experience with municipal law started when I got out of law school. I went to work with a law firm that was the city attorney for Dorval and was associate there for a while, became partners with Ed Carter and others, and he actually represented the city of Dorval for 43 years, which is quite an accomplishment. After I left there, I did not do any municipal work for a while, and then moved back into his office. I think it was in 1996. I served as a municipal court judge for almost 5 years, and then in May of 2002, I became the city attorney and was also the solicitor. So I had experience in a municipal court, both as a judge and as a solicitor, and then as a city attorney. I believe this is already, was already addressed, so I don't need, know that I need to spend much time on it about the difference between a sole practitioner and a firm. The real advantage of the sole practitioner is that you'll get the attorney to represent the city on most items. Then, if it's a specialty item, Gerber handles a lot of it. And then you would hire the most qualified person to handle any other matter. And that was the experience that we had in Doral. One other item that I think should be discussed is conflicts. If representing more than one city, you are going to, particularly neighboring cities, you're going to have some items that you need to deal with in which you would likely have a conflict. And I'm not sure how you intend to handle your jail, but we did negotiate contracts with both Sandy Springs and Johns Creek for to handle their jail, jailing of prisoners indoor. And that's just one example of an intergovernmental contract. You would have others. I understand there's already some thought in mind to confine with Sandy Springs for a 911 system, which I'm well aware is not adequate in DeKalb County. It's inexcusable to be put on hold when you call 911, and that's what's happening now. I believe I've addressed the points I wanted to address with you, and be happy to answer any questions.
Councilman Ryder? You indicated that in your first stint with the law firm that represented Doraville,
yes,
that you started as an associate, worked with a partner. Give me some sense for the kinds of legal work you were doing for Doraville as part of that stint in your career.
Well, we would, of course, draft new ordinances, and then had several litigations in which I would assist the chief litigator, and then on occasion I would attend the council meetings to substitute for the city attorney. So I was doing the broad range of items. And I guess one other thing I did not mention a minute ago is I would propose to, and I think it was in my proposal, the hourly billing rate. And as I say, I have an office. I would not need to be furnished an office at the city hall. And most work that, that the city attorney does can be done in their office and on the phone. So, and I would think that we would save you quite a bit of money to have your own office. And also, I can work as solicitor, as the sole solicitor, until such time as the volume picks up. I doubt that you're going to have the volume in your court, although we don't know that, but probably not going to have nearly, well, for instance, you're not going to make speeding tickets considering your two neighboring cities on 285.
You say we can't get them, huh?
I don't think you have enough mileage for the speed to pick back up.
How much experience do you have negotiating contracts under the Service Delivery Strategy Act?
That's the way we're doing that this the last several years, and we've negotiated some of them, but nothing ever got finalized because of the dispute with the several cities and the county over whether they're actually double taxing by not crediting it properly. And there is a study going on right now, and it's about three-fourths of the way through, as I understand it.
So your experience was with the gap with the Service Delivery Strategy?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, Danny. Mr. Powell, you know, just taking a look at this, and I presume, you know, I don't have the in-depth proposal that you put out, but I'm looking at some type of a down-the-line max cost figure for the city. You've been involved with Doraville. You know how many hours it takes. Doraville is a little smaller than us, but they've got more police, as you said, so they've got more tickets. But can you give us a feel for that whatsoever? That, you know, $150 an hour, you know, that's That doesn't mean a lot to me in an accumulative number.
Well, the startup amount, obviously, there's going to be a good bit more time. Everybody understands that. But on an ongoing basis, I don't believe that you will have the need for as much time as, certainly on a per capita basis, as durable, because you're going to have a city manager. And I can assure you that that my dealings with the city manager in Shambly and in Decatur indicate that there's not nearly as many questions asked of the attorney. And spend much less time by virtue of having a city manager. And that's a very good idea. And I would be happy to sit and discuss, and we could cap it at some reasonable figure if that was appropriate. One other thing you couldn't really determine exactly yet is the number of court sessions you're going to have. I understand that Sandy Springs may have three parts of days a week. Dorval only had one night, one afternoon, 3 to 6 or whatever, on Tuesday. And we had three judges and two solicitors. We were having a large volume of cases. I think there's been some talk about maybe having more sessions to be more user-friendly. I don't know that that should be, but that's certainly up to you. But I'm not sure that should be your focus. And certainly I believe there's room there to reduce the cost.
Could you give us some type of a ballpark figure, cap that you would be thinking about with,
I wouldn't think it would go over 12.5 a month. That would be a guess, but maybe initially there may be more time than that. And I'm basing that somewhat on my Dorval experience, which actually was a little more than that a month. But as I say, there was no city manager, and truthfully, that seems to be a lot of hand-holding that I don't think would happen here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
pal. Appreciate it.
You good?
Yeah, fine.
My talk is
choking. All right. Riley Lewis and McClendon. Mr. Anderson.
To invite us up here and be considered for this position. I would like to start off by saying that I know all of you have been involved in this since the very beginning of the movement. 3 years ago, when Mr. Weber decided that it was time to start the city of Dunwoody, I was one of the ones there. We got the city movement started. I was assisting the charter committee, which several of you, or at least one of you, were on the charter committee. We drafted the original charter. Granted, it took several years to get it through the process, but here we are. We did make it through the process. And during the last 3 years, I have devoted countless hours researching municipal issues, trying to find the pitfalls, trying to, actually, one of the things is drafting the ordinances. We have drafted a complete set of ordinances. We bounced them off state law, and we bounced them off the county, and that's where we've gotten the current set of ordinances that we are presenting to council. Our proposal, I knew that this would be an enormous amount of work initially, and would take an enormous amount of skill and knowledge. That's why I went to seek who I thought would be the best firm that would have the skill and knowledge, and it is the Riley Lewis and McClendon Group. They have started up. Or at least assisted in every new city that has happened here recently. They know the pitfalls. They've gone through and started up the cities. They know all the legal issues. That's why I wanted them. I know a lot of the legal issues by working on it, but I wanted the experts that have actually done it to assist us. One thing, you guys talked about conflicts. I'll have Bill talk about that here in a little bit. Our cost proposal, we have a cost proposal of $15,000 a month, and that is for the retainer fee. That encompasses the services of myself, Lenny, and the entire firm. This will give you 40 hours of coverage a week. And during the startup, we have been putting in many, many more hours than that. It's going to take many, many more hours than that through the entire initial period. We're talking far in excess of 6 months. And then even after that, that's just phase one. In phase one, all we're going to try and do is just get it up and running and get going. We will have a city manager, but the city manager is going to need a lot of help. He's going to need a lot of assistance. He's going to need someone that knows the timing issues. He's going to need someone who knows the issues that are coming up to help him to make sure that there aren't legal issues and startup issues. Seeing that we have done this startup, and I have been investigating this for the last 3 years, we do have an in-depth knowledge of this, and any city manager is going to need this help. And then once we get beyond the first stage, stage two will be trying to, if we go the contractor route and do not have one contractor, which looks like it may be the case now, we're going to have a whole bunch of disparate vendors with their own processes, trying to get that all to gel into a comprehensive, cohesive unit will be the city manager's job. There will be a lot of legal issues with it, too. And then after that, you guys will have your feet on the ground. You'll have an in-depth knowledge of what you want. And at that time, you're probably going to want to, again, change the ordinances to make them specific to exactly how you want to operate the city. So for the first several years, this is going to be an enormous amount of work to go through. And what we did is put a proposal where for that flat rate, you get virtually almost all the services. What is not included in that is litigation, but we're hoping to go GRMA. GRMA will handle most litigation. What they don't handle is contract disputes and lawsuits with injunctive relief, but they basically cover everything else. So our flat fees will cover almost any issue that will come up, and we have the experts with Riley Lewis and McClendon for any of those issues that do arrive. Zoning, these are some of the best zoning attorneys around. They've been winning. Sign ordinances, they've won the sign ordinances. Adult business, they got some of the adult businesses out of Johns Creek. So these guys are the experts that we have. I would like to say a little bit, I am a Dunwoody resident, have been for the last 10 plus years. I do have in-depth knowledge of Dunwoody. I too was in law review. My last, while I have been full-time employed and have been employed, my concentration has been in startups, so I have a can-do attitude to make it done, try and see what needs to be done and be proactive and get it done, and try and make sure that the legal does not get in the way of operations. Now I'd like to ask Mr. Riley to come up and address the conflict issues and his firm.
Thank you, Brian, and thank all of you for having us here tonight. Thank you for letting us do all the work you've let us do so far. You know, it's all the people who've been here tonight, they're all fine lawyers, and they could all do a fine job being city attorneys. But I think that the real difference is you'd need to interview them about 4 years from now. Because what you have here is the once-in-a-lifetime change agent of the startup of the city. And that is completely different than being a city attorney in an ongoing city. It has a set of challenges that I can tell you that we did not know how to meet in Sandy Springs the first time. That we knew we were going somewhere. But we knew we were walking through the snow in a blizzard trying to get to the end. And we don't feel that way anymore. It's still always rain and it's still always discomforting, but at least we can see the end and we know where we're going. I don't think that that's where you want to go with a city attorney this time, someone who's walking blindly through the snow. You need to have people who know how to do it. We decided that we wanted to work with Brian because we knew Brian had the confidence of the city. We knew that Brian had, there was no one that knew more about Senate Bill 80, the history of this city, the history of of how this got started than Brian Anderson. We knew we couldn't compete with that. What we felt we could compete with is that we helped write House Bill 36, which was the bill that was a transition bill of how counties turned their services over to cities. And we were the ones who helped write it, we modified it, and we have defended it in court, and so far successfully. There are three phases of the startup, as Brian has previously mentioned. And you do have a set of vanilla ordinances. And the vanilla ordinances you have are by on purpose. Because at the point in time that you start your city, you're going to have to pass a bunch of ordinances that are not going to have your imprint on them. They're not going to have the imprint of the city on it. They're not going to have the imprint of what people want on it. But they are going to substantially allow you to start. Because you can't make decisions on ordinances in 3 days. You can't make decisions on ordinances in 3 weeks or three, or really in 3 months. But you need a set to start with. And that's what we're bringing. And in the first 6 to 8 months that we do the startup, all we'll be doing is running and running and running and running and putting it together on the fly every single day. Every day. And there won't be time to do anything else. And you need somebody who's been through that, running through that time. If we go to a full service buy-in with something on the CH model, it is still, no matter what they say, it doesn't come out of the box. It's a custom build. If we go with a hybrid like Mr. Boykin suggests, it is also a custom build. If you go into a procedure where you're sitting there and bidding every single piece out, it's a custom build. And that custom build has to have a lawyer who's used to building a city at every single phase of it. And that's what we do in the first 6 months. The 7, maybe 8 months. After that, and really the one who is really the expert is my brother Cecil McClendon, who's sitting there, there becomes what I call is the institutionalization that takes place. What we have is we have no institutional history. All of these different departments had to come together. They came from Roswell or Doraville or College Park or Jacksonville, Florida. And they all come with a different way of doing their business. And they all came from different city attorneys and they all came from different processes. And what you end up having to do is you have to go in piece by piece by piece. You have to take apart every process that somebody brought from one place, and you have to test it against the law. Now, a city like Roswell had the benefit of having that testing over a number of years. A city like Doraville had the benefit of having that testing over a number of years. But what you have to do in a new city is you have to test every piece. And that's one of the important reasons that your lawyer's there all the time to make it, to build it out the first time. You don't want to leave gaps in your methodology that you don't know why they're there. And I'll guarantee you can go through any city in this state and you will find those gaps. We try to clean them up the first time. Now about 20 months out, 24 months out, and we're doing this in Johns Creek right now, you are going to start deciding how you really want your ordinances to be. And I would think in about 24 months, you're going to want to start doing all the rewrites on the ordinances. You're going to have a lot more history of being the council and mayor. You're going to have a lot more understanding of what's going on. You're going to be much more sophisticated in the process then. And you're going to know what you want and why you want. And that's when I would propose, and this is what we've done in Sandy Springs, we've done it to Johns Creek, and we're doing it, is that we'll go through the ordinances chapter by chapter by chapter. By that time, you'll have staff. By that time, you'll have solidified all your ideas. and the staff will be on board to help you bring your ideas to fruition. And we'll be there with the staff, and we'll help rewrite all these ordinances to where then they do have your input, that they are what you want. And they are more than just the vanilla set of ordinances that we brought in so you can start it all up. So about 4 years out, you could hire anybody. But in the first 4 years, there's a whole lot of things that we know how to do that nobody else has done. I'm sure they could learn. But by the same token, going through that snowstorm is not a good thing to have to do. Let me just touch a little bit on.
Which is conference and how you benefit.
Sure. Let me touch a little bit on those. I do want to talk about the month. We have a $15,000 a month retainer. I would tell you that we will probably do 60, 70, 80. Hours a week between all of us over the next 3 months, 4 months. Yeah? Because this is, to do a startup, it's a more than full-time consuming process. I will not make any money on this until maybe the middle of next year to catch up. Won't do it. You can't do it by yourself. I'm watching Brian every day, and I have Lenny working with him every single day, and Noah's one of our other partners who's sitting out there too, and he's starting to go through it too. And we're working all the time right now. And it is a struggle to get in front of you, the things that we have to get in front of you every night. One person cannot do that. Just can't. It's not possible. And you just couldn't get it done that way. But I want you to know that we're going to stick by that bit. You know, we're not tied to one city that I can't make some money off one and not be making the money off the next one while we start you up. I didn't make money any money in Johns Creek when I started them up. Fortunately, I had work in Sandy Springs. And I was able to support myself while we got it started. And I'm hoping that someday I'll make a little money over here. But we won't be making any money at least in the first 6 months. And we'll really be giving, the work we'll be doing is probably going to be around $25, $35 an hour when you boil it down to what we get paid and what we have to deliver out. Let me talk about conflicts just for a minute. Most law firms that do municipal work for a living have multiple clients. I think Dick Carruthers out in Gwinnett County has 13 cities in Gwinnett County that he represents. Mr. Haney has 4 cities, 5 cities in Cobb County. Everybody has to have multiple counties to bring you the level of service that you need to do have on a broad range of subjects for a city this size. What we do is, in Sandy Springs, I make policy for Johns Creek, and Wendell makes policy for Sandy Springs, and we're putting together a 911 authority. We met last Friday and hope to have it finished and hope the city council's all on it. And we work together instead of apart, even though that Cecil works for Sandy Springs and works for Wendell over there. I would see that there would not be very seldom any time that we would not have aligned interests in anything we do. I would say to you that the relationships that we have help our cities rather than hinder our cities. And that we're trained as lawyers to avoid conflicts. That's one of the things we have to be trained to do. And if there's a perception of a conflict, or if there is a real conflict, right now I have a conflict lawyer out there in Johns Creek because sometimes there's going to be a conflict between me and Johns Creek. My subdivision has a fuss with Johns Creek right now him. I have a conflict. Well, I have a conflict for you, Michael Cross. He does all the conflict work. You know, I would assume that if there was a conflict, and I can't imagine one. I hadn't had one in Sandy Springs in 2 years of being in Johns Creek, that we would just simply get a conflict lawyer to come in and do the work. But it just doesn't seem to happen. We do work with Doraville. Cecil negotiated both of those agreements, I believe, with Doraville for the jail facilities for the city. If I could just mention a few things about setting up courts as the solicitor. Before I, in my previous life, I was an assistant DA. I was an assistant solicitor general. I ran trial divisions for Lewis Slayton in Fulton County. And I think before they made me a judge, I tried 13 capital felonies last year before I was a judge. And after that, I was a judge for the city of Atlanta. I became chief judge. I had eight other judges who worked for me full-time. I have a staff of 123. We were the largest court system in the state. I've built the Atlanta Community Court, which is the largest alcohol and drug treatment court in the southeastern United States. I built the Atlanta Olympic Court, where I taught how I brought 3,000 different law enforcement officials from all over the state and built a simplified court system. I built the Sandy Springs Court, Johns Creek Court. I don't think there's going to be a problem building a court system. And as to the multiple, in terms of how we run our system, if you look at how we run the systems in the other cities, we have two solicitors in there, and that's for only for one reason. It's because it's the most cost-effective methodology to do it. What we did was we assessed the strength within the system, and we knew that we were paying, you pay about $800 an hour to run a court. That's what you do. And if we had one solicitor, we were strangleholding, and we were burning maybe $1,600 extra because they were holding up the system. And so what we did is we figured out a system that maximized the utility of the court and minimized the cost. And that's why you've seen our proposal to solicitors to come in, because what we're anticipating doing is minimizing your hours that you have court actually in session and minimizing the time that you, the amount of money you actually burn on running the court. I'm open to any questions you might have.
Let me ask a question about cost. One of the gentlemen earlier in the presentation from the guest we had here tonight talked about the budget being $213,000 that the courts group has come forward with for this function, and your cost is going to be $315,000 roughly as retainer. Can you kind of describe that, Brian, if you would?
Can you address the cost structure better?
Well, you know, our cost is $15,000 a month for a retainer. That's $180,000. We're preparing to do a minimum of 172 hours of work a month, which is 4.3 weeks at 40 hours a week. As I said, it'll be 60, 70 hours during the startup period, but we're not going to charge you for it. That works out somewhere around $80 an hour. That's not $150 an hour. If you've heard what I've tried to speak on of how much it takes to get this started up, you can't do it on 25 hours a week. You can't do it on 20 hours a week. You can't do it on 12.5 a month. The rest of that money in terms of what would be is in litigation and for land acquisition. And what's the other thing we have in there? Litigation, land acquisition is the rest of it. We don't spend any in litigation. We hope to spend enough in land acquisition that we get all the parts we can get. But you have to have that built in into that piece. The solicitor work we propose at $100 an hour. And we don't charge any travel time. We don't charge for getting there or going back. We just while we're there. And that's consistent with what the other cities are paying also.
One of the things that came out in the newspaper recently, I saw the city of Sandy Springs last year had a charge of $765,000 for legal services. I understand they've capped that now, something less than half of that. We don't want that to happen in our city. You know, we're running a tight budget, as everybody's been aware of here, and, you know, we need to make sure that we're spending every dollar appropriately. And, you know, I'd like for you to go back and take a look at that number a little bit.
Well, one thing I have on proposal is that we were willing to cap it to the budget of litigation. That is addressed.
Danny?
Yep. Just a couple questions here. As I see this, and just help me out, Mr. Riley, Mr. Anderson, you are a full-service firm. In other words, you will not have to go out and get other legal specialties outside your firm. They're all in included. Is that correct?
That is correct. There, as you see, and if you've seen our outline, we have some people who work for us under contract, but we have to pay them. If you see, I have a cert person over there. She's probably the best cert attorney in the state. She used to work for the city of Atlanta, now she's retired, and she works for me under a contract. If you see on the other side, we have the lawyer who's a sexually oriented business lawyer, who is the best municipal and county defense in sexually oriented business, I think, in the United States, out of Chattanooga, Tennessee, who put together the sexually oriented business ordinance for Johns Creek, and who I proposed that we're going to use for to do that also. If he were to come in and litigate, we'd have to pay the litigation. Our litigation rate's $150 an hour. If he had to come in and litigate, he charges $250, and it would come out of our litigation budget. So, you know, there's that potential for those kinds of things. But on the whole, we can do everything. You know, Cecil has a great experience, and my brother Cecil. Cecil's put your hand up, so at least they know what I'm talking about.
Cecil McClendon, I think we've met most of us.
Cecil was assistant city attorney for the city of Kennesaw. he and I both represented Cobb County in a number of, for Cobb DOT. Cecil has a great land use background. Cecil probably, at the time that we were working there, he wouldn't say it, but I would. He's probably one of the top 10 or 15 condemnation lawyers for in the state of Georgia, at least in terms of Fort Condemnors, and has great abilities in complex matters. Cecil negotiated the sale of the Kennesaw water system over to Cobb County, which was a very complicated sale, as well as a very complicated land transaction. So we bring a level of sophistication into our work that basically everything you need to do, we can do. We're big enough that we have people who have expertise in different areas, but we're small enough that we don't have to charge you like a big firm that had 30 lawyers out there. No, they can't charge you $150 an hour.
Okay. Just to add on to that, for my clarification, these lawyers or specialists that you have on contract, are they part of your retainer fee?
Well, the people who would be working in those two people that specifically are for litigation, they would come out of a litigation fee, out of our litigation piece. You wouldn't be billing them separately.
Okay.
You know, but it would come out of our litigation fund, and that's why you have to have a litigation fund. We don't know what the litigation is going to be. In Johns Creek,
Let me just say real quickly, what we would do is anybody that we brought in to work on something that would fall under the retainer would be part of the retainer. So I have a person who does real estate transactions for me, runs my basics of real estate transactions, and if it's something that was a real estate related issue that fell into the retainer, then that would all be against the retainer. It would just depend upon the type of business that we were dealing with, but I think you're correct. We have several attorneys with different areas that they have familiarity with. That what that does is it means if we get something that I might not particularly know, and I would have to go get an attorney outside to come and help me with, and we'd be paying that outside. We have a lot of people in-house who can handle those issues for us that would fall under the retainer. Yes, sir.
Mr. Anderson, you were on the ordinances committee, but not on the attorney committee for Citizens for Dunwoody, or were you?
there was no attorney committee. You're talking the courts committee?
I believe that's correct.
I did attend the last two meetings of the court committee, basically when they were wrapping up.
Okay.
And I was not on the courts committee from the inception and going forward, no.
I'd have to look at the task force report to see the differences between your proposal and the cost structure and what was proposed and the fee structure based on the city attorney proposal. Getting back to the ordinances, you've been a volunteer and have been working on ordinances for quite a while. If your firm and Mr. Riley's firm is not selected, what ordinances are already written to be provided over to the city in the sense of your volunteer work up to this point?
We have in the court committee about a dozen of the ordinances we can do, and then I've also, Bob Lunskin through some of his associates, are working on the zoning commission, ordinance. I'm sure that they would probably be willing to go forward for anybody. I couldn't say that, but there's about a dozen. Plus, zoning would have some high-powered specialty people working on right now.
I just wanted to make sure that the work that you've been doing as a volunteer and working on the ordinances, they're in the can, basically, and are ready to be handed over. I would hate to have that held over us, I guess, is my point.
Now, the task force would be happy to.
Okay.
There are others that have been done by the Riley McClendon Group that is their property. But
okay.
That's done by the task force, we'd be happy to turn over.
Robert?
Mr. Wilson, Judge Auslander expressed some concern over stuff that came out during the interview process. I wonder if you could help us understand that and kind of talk us a little bit about that.
Yeah, what it was there is a code ordinance that addresses municipal offices. Now, municipal officer is not actually defined in the ordinance, and the case law says it's not actually defined. What it says is that municipal officers must be a resident of the city for 12 months, and it says unless otherwise designated in the charter. Municipal officers, by the case law, have been defined as certain. A county attorney has been clearly found as a municipal officer. Members of the Board of Tax Commission have been found as a municipal officer. I would venture to guess that a municipal attorney would be found as such by a court, but there is no case law stating that. What many people do is address it by saying the charter states otherwise. You can state that because your position states that there is a residential requirement, and in the charter there is no such residential requirement from the city attorney, that you could say the charter states otherwise. You can certainly make that argument. And you could also make, then again, a counter-argument by that saying that the reason why you have a residential requirement is because we have districts. And therefore, we had to make districts. So you could say there's not apples and oranges there. You could say that, no, the reason why that is particularly in there for the elected officers is because of the district requirement, and that's why they didn't put in the others, is because there is no district requirement for the other positions. It's a gray area. I mean, no one can say one way or the other without going to court.
And I believe during the interview process, that's exactly what Mr. Zucker pointed out. He said that it's gray, and he didn't say it was a requirement to have it. But he just mentioned it as there's a point in his favor that he actually lived.
Thank you. Mr. Anderson, Mr. Riley, would you educate us on the solicitors or plural singular on exactly cost factors? Is that a net expense? It should not be the way I look at it. But would you give that us some kind of?
Well, you know, a judge should never look at what the result is in terms of income but.
I guess is that what I'm asking.
There are three reasons that you have a municipal court. Okay, let's start from there. Mm-hmm. You have a municipal court because it keeps your police officers from having to go to another jurisdiction to go to court, and that keeps them in the city and on the beat. It gives you an ability to reflect what your sense of what the community's tolerance and concerns are right there in your community, not only with traffic, but also with planning and zoning and code enforcement. And the third thing is it maintains the revenue in the city. rather than sending the revenue to the magistrate court of DeKalb County or to the recorder's court, in this case, of DeKalb County.
Mr. Wright, can I just stop you there? Just let me just maybe simplify my question. You know, is that a, is a solicitor cost an expense to the city? Is it a wash? Or is it a, you know, in, would it be considered an income to the city? You know, the plus, minus, or,
Sandy
or
Springs,
wash on the...
In Sandy Springs, the solicitor's cost is $180,000 a year. That, but they do about $4 million in fines.
And it, it's, that, that answers all my questions.
Any other questions, counsel? All right, thank you very much, gentlemen. All right, that concludes item number two. Item number three, discussion of various options for city implementation. Let me pass over to Robert to get us started on this discussion, if I may.
Yeah, I sent around by email a very thin approach document, and hopefully everybody had a chance to look at it. I did print up some extras for folks, not enough for everybody, but there'll be an opportunity for many folks to have copies. I handed them out, so I'll take that down.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'd love if Adrian or Larry are in the audience, particularly, I'd like them to see it. The basic premises that I was trying to accomplish here, and I will say that I wrote this up, but really, Councilman Shorel gets the majority of the credit for it, because most of this really came out of his head, and he and I chatted, and I took notes.
He won't hold that again.
And I agreed to jot it down and present it, but really, it's Congressman Shorel's plan as much as anybody's. General. You know, we just hired. General and councilman, I'm hired.
Congratulations.
That's great,
has begun. Really, there's three things I was trying to accomplish, and I think that Denny would agree with this. One is to hire a minimum number of city employees. I have a real concern over creating a traditional city. And the idea of bringing on 20 or 30 or 40 city employees concerned me. The second was to try to recontract out services in a competitive environment, to split it out so that we asked firms to come back with proposals in areas where they had expertise, and to some degree eliminate the general contractor who would, you know, the Halliburton, if you will, right? The advantage of a Halliburton isn't that they do everything, it's that they're capable of making sure someone else does everything. So I wanted, and they make a lot of money doing that. Just ask Dick Cheney. I wanted to eliminate that layer to the degree that I could, and also to recognize that the six of us can't do this ourselves. We are going to need real professional help to get this done. And that's going to be contracting with consulting firms to help us get the city started. So in essence, there's really two elements to this. The first is to lay out a small number of city employees that I think we need. And they are basically the department heads. So city manager, a finance director, public works director, community development director, chief of police, admin and HR manager, information technology manager, a city clerk and court clerk, and then perhaps a code enforcement officer. And we had Denny and I had a lot of discussion going back and forth as to whether it's easy to hire someone externally to do that job or whether it's difficult to do that. And part of that has to do with liability concerns, and we just need to get some advice on what the best thing to do there. And basically try to spearhead an effort to get those people hired as quickly as possible. Part of that is I'm reluctant to rely heavily on interim
positions. I'd like us not to try to get an interim city manager. I'd like us to get a real city manager. I'd like us to get that guy on board because he's going to help us pick who the real finance director is going to be, who the real chief of police is going to be. So I think hiring these people and doing it quickly is incredibly important, partly because we need them, and partly because it helps us avoid having an interim city manager, interim positions. The other piece of this is getting somebody to help us rebid these things as rapidly as possible. And what I'd like to suggest is that you can sort of dovetail these things. If you focus on getting your people in place while you're sending out your RFPs, the goal would be to have the people come on board and have responses already back and graded so that in very short order, they can help us make the final decision on which vendor is going to provide which services. So we don't have a lot of time. Going with Fitch to Hill would have provided the timeline that was the easiest. That option's gone. And frankly, that option was very expensive. This option's going to be very tight. But if we focus a lot of attention now on bringing on people and bringing them on as quick as we can, and if we focus a lot of attention now on sending out requests for RFPs with the hope that the people come in and the RFP process is 85% done, so that all the people have to do is say, okay, if these are my three finalists, you know, sort of like the way we've done with the city attorney, right? Is that work started weeks and weeks ago. And we weren't involved in any of the early stages. There was a lot of time-consuming work. There was a lot of vetting that went on. But ultimately, the final decision is ours, and that's the way it should be. I'd like to see us do something similar with regard to getting RFPs and having the people who are going to be the department heads responsible for implementing the city have the final say on how this works. So with that as my preamble, I'll answer questions or entertain suggestions for changes.
Denny. Yeah, I just going over a couple things, Robert. You know, I sent you an email, and you know some of the things that I want to tell you. Number one, I firmly agree with your interim position stance. Except I think you and I have both talked to the finance person is the one person that we may have to change. But to get someone in to do an interim and then to change halfway down the stream is just something. Another thing that I don't think we need to do. All it is another bump in the road. As you all know, you know how I got started on this is that I looked at the two things that we were doing, and I saw CH2M Hill as very expensive, hard to define services on one side, and maybe sometimes difficult to understand what they were doing, and over here the option of hiring a lot of city employees, which I am firmly against. I did not run on that. And so therefore, you know, I'm on the privatization of public government. So I just asked people that I knew with some questions. And that's where some of these ideas come up. And the main things that as we look at this, I think we have to keep a dual focus here. Number one, we can go out and we can hire, there's three people we're going to hire probably no matter what as I see it. And that's a city manager, a police chief, and a city clerk, courts clerk. And then the other people, you know, we could hire, I think Robert and I have had discussions back and forth, and Ken and everybody, you know, one-on-one here about, well, what are the other positions? And maybe there's maybe five more there, maybe four more. Robert and I, with the code enforcement, I feel that he can go up out here under one of the other areas. The other focus is to, when you put out the RFQs, the RFPs, whatever you want to call them, is to see if there is, I will just call it the CH2M Hill type, not their bid, but their approach, where somebody might want to come in and do the whole gamut. I don't know. One gentleman tonight spoke of that, taking a look at doing the pieces. The one thing that I've been advised is that you'd want to group these tasks in some type of an organizational grouping so that if you just send out an RFP, kind of a broad sense RFPs, you might have, you'd be inundated with, 37 people that want to cut the grass at Brook Run, 16 more that want to do the Nature Center or whatever. So when you get this together, you need to kind of take a look at grouping the tasks that go together. And we have kind of bashed this back and forth. You know, there's not a big disagreement. There's probably, you know, some differences that we have, but that's okay. That's not hard to work out. And as you well know, you know, I presume I can bring in, you know, somebody's name. I talked to a gentleman who is the city manager at Weston, Florida. He has spoken to me for about an hour and a half. I will tell everybody right now, I didn't know him before I called him. I was given his name as a reference. I have no financial dealings with him. I have no anything with him whatsoever. But the whole fact that he has been doing this in Weston, Florida since 1996. They originally started out with 3 employees. They have recently gone to 9. And, you know, in talking to him and how to group some of this together, is I was just trying to pick his brain, because I'm not a duty expert on this. I'll be the first guy to ask, but I'm a guy that even asks directions when I'm driving, so I don't have a problem with asking. But I think that's a couple of things that I just came up with, is that on the first, when we start out there, hire the minimum number of high-level city employees. I said that we had to keep that option open to also, you know, I don't know, I should have brought copies of my email, but I'll make some available to all the members of the council and the public. But the purpose is to also not only just have high-level employees, but also have the option to have a quote-unquote management company or companies come in and bundle these services in some way, shape, or form that they could run them. You know, and then I have some changes in that. You know, I think that we would down here under the list of city employees, it almost have to be split. That if we went the one route that I was talking about, that we've discussed hiring managers for each group of whatever we put together, having our as a city employee, we would have this many over here. If we came in with somebody that had a bid that managed the entire group of services, we would have fewer city employees by, you know, basically by definition. You know, really all I did was hack around on what Robert scribed out, and by the way, he did a fine job of that. And the other thing is that when you come down to police, you know, I know 53 days is a short time, but, you know, in my business, we can move a pretty big fighting force anywhere in the world and give them a job in a lot less than that. So I wanted to change the police to start up at the earliest, and wording that at the earliest March 1st, if possible, but not later than May 1st, because I see a benefit and a savings to the city if we can start it up. And Councilman Taylor, you'll have to weigh in on this, but, you know, because you're up on the police, running the police angle from our group here. I've heard that it takes 3 months lead time to get cars and things like that. You know, city manager and then the police chiefs comes on by December 1st. That's March 1st for me. If it works, I think it's a benefit, because that's what we all ran on. Probably the number 3 issue that we got on the one poll that was run was police. By the folks, and in a lot of places it was number two, by the way. But to start that up as soon as possible would be better, for as far as I'm concerned. And it also shows the citizens that you know, we're getting it on. You know, we know what we got an objective. Is that aggressive? Yes, but why not? Let's be aggressive. What the heck? I've got other things that I want to change on that, but I'm gonna hold up here because I'm sure other people want to speak on this. But I think, to me, this gives us the option between going over here with the Hill approach, the Hill bid, that was, to me, again, too expensive, left us with no contingency funds, and it also was very questionable for me, and I think some of the other ones, the council members that I've talked to, pinning down the exact services we were getting, and over here on this side, hiring a group, what I consider a large group to run a basically traditional city, which I am definitely opposed to. With that, I'll pass the gavel.
John, before I talk, let me make a couple points. Denny, one I'll throw out, and Tom, when we discuss police, you can chime in on your level of expertise. But on the city manager side, despite public comment, I'm not down to three individuals. It's seven or more. But the one recurring theme that I am getting, and Robert, I think you alluded to it, was that the city manager is going to want to be heavily involved in the choosing of the, you know, of the personnel. So I think that's that was pointed out and something I'd like to stress, because it seemed to be a definite recurring theme in those interviews. So I think the process of getting the resumes in, ferreting them out, you know, A, B, and C, but the city manager can look at A, B, and C piles, if you will, and kind of do his or her thing. And the second thing that, again, was a recurring theme in the interviews on the police was a similar type strategy. It was more or less a warning to be careful, because whoever that city manager picks as chief of police, one, an interim, again, thought process was probably not a smart thing to do, because the chief of police is not going to want to inherit somebody else's duties. And everybody is an individual. Each chief has their own brand and their own personality, and the way they do things is really distinctly different. So it's something we should be cognizant of. And I don't see anything in this plan that's going to that goes against that grain of thinking, but just keep that in mind. And the last comment, John, before I hit you, would be to Denny. Just real quickly, Denny, can you tell us on Weston, Florida, you mentioned 1996, did they incorporate in 96? And
I cannot tell you that. I just ask them it's a city of 65,000,
okay,
by the way.
65,000. And it sounds like on your conversations they're doing, they don't have a master CH2 type. It sounds like they're doing it themselves.
Exactly. But they do have, like, they have stayed with the county police. Broward County Police provide their police.
IGAs.
And they do have, several of those, but other than that, yes, they go out on their own. They do not have a master, quote-unquote, CH2 on the hill.
Okay,
for lack
perfect.
Of a better word.
Good work on
Mayor,
that.
If I may, on the Western Florida.
Yes.
Severn Trent did the startup on that to begin with, but Weston, after a maturation process, made a determination that they didn't need that master contractor and the city manager could do it. I think they sort of jettisoned Severn about a year ago, maybe a year and a half.
I did not know that, Mr. Riley, very honestly, but I can tell you that, they have gone from 3 to 9 employees, and that was when they centralized, if you will, instead of decentralized.
Right. They at first had gone with somebody at least to put it all together, and then after some maturation, they decided they didn't need their overhead anymore.
Okay. John?
Time is of the essence. We need to move forward. We need to move forward relatively quickly on a number of items. When I saw this, my main concern, first off, was the finance aspect of it. We need to start getting in the money. There's a number of bills and permits that need to go out quickly. I think we need help doing this. I don't see us just going and doing a finance director, the assistant. We need to move quickly. The city manager is not coming in until, what, November 15th? Is that an estimated date? I'm not sure how we can wait that long. I've already heard a rumor that the liquor licenses were already going out from DeKalb County into Dunwoody. I don't know that as a fact, but that's what I heard. We need to assure that our licenses, our liquor licenses and our permits and our fees are sent out to our residents so that we can start collecting that money in. I think we need some help. I think we need to, get some sort of structure in place soon. I have no problem with the going out for bids and contracting to do certain services. It makes a lot of sense to me. But I think we need to move fast. However we do it, and I'm open to suggestions. I want to hear plans and proposals. But I think we need to move faster in some respects than slower.
Denny, let me get Denny, John, one of your questions and comments on the finance. And I know Danny has a few things he wanted to.
Yeah. Over this past week, I've had two meetings with SunTrust Bank. SunTrust Bank is a Georgia-based bank, of course. It's a very financially stable bank. It's listed as one of the more stable banks in this unstable economy that we have. And I met with the CFO, who's a Dunwoody resident, to discuss that the financial stability, because the last thing we want to do is to have our funds and be doing business with a bank that may not be around. And there have been some of those in our community that have happened. And after having some assurances from him, and quite frankly, his assurances were as best he can give in today's environment, because nobody knows what the devil is going to happen next week or next month financially, but I feel very comfortable with SunTrust Bank. Denny and I had a meeting with the government officials, the people that deal with not-for-profit and government within SunTrust Bank, and they're very eager to provide us a tax anticipation note to support our needs. One of the things we need to move forward on quickly, and why we need this decision to be made quickly, is that we need to be able to put together a budget so that we can find out what our cash flows are going to be, so that we'll end up knowing what our needs are going to be at the low point of our cash flows for year 2009. We will certainly make sure that this thing is vetted, probably meeting with one other bank in the process of doing this. But it's important that we have this starting January the 1st. As you know, these tax anticipation notes are notes that have to be repaid by year end. And that's one of the things we got to make sure that we're able to do, obviously, is to make sure that the repayment takes place timely as well. The LIBOR rate over the past 2 months has gone from about 2.5 to 4.25, and it's just incredible what's happened in a time when credit is tight. These banks are very reluctant to lend each other, and this has created a situation where the LIBOR rates have gone up tremendously over that period of time. But having said that, we obviously qualify for a tax-exempt LIBOR rate, and the numbers that are being quoted to us, I think, are substantially lower than the ones being quoted to a for-profit company, which is 4.25. We're more in the range of 3.72 in that regard. But that's today. Anything that you do is going to be somewhat, we can get a 12-month fixed rate, but most likely in today's environment, we're going to end up with since LIBOR rate is so high, I can't imagine it going up a heck of a lot more, but I can't imagine the stock market dropping 20 points in 1 week either. But the LIBOR rate would be fixed at the end of each month under the proposal that I think that SunTrust is going to come back to us on. They've given us no formal proposal. We gave them an income part of our budget, but no expense part of it, because we don't know what that's going to be just yet. And we won't know until we get form of government and to get the implementation plan in place.
Perfect. Thank you, Danny. Tom?
Just looking at, Rob, Danny, I mean, we're looking at possibly hiring an outside firm to run that RFQ or RFP process, consulting firm, what's your thought process as well?
Yeah, I mean, my thought process was that we need some professional help to get the RFP process done. We need some professional help to get the recruitment of initial personnel. And I would propose that we split that up and find two specialty firms, one of them to manage the RFP process and one to manage the hiring process. And, my own sense, and I put it in my document, was that I think Boykin makes a one of the logical choices to help with the RFP process. They've clearly got an expertise in that area. It's a relatively, it's in their sweet spot. They've got some prep work already done. I think they can take the ball and run with it. I don't know who we should get to help us with the personnel side. I don't have a firm in mind. We did use a firm, a Slavin Associates, to help us with the city manager thing. And my only concern with Slavin is twofold. One is they are really expensive. And I don't mind paying that to do a national search for a city manager. But I don't know that we can afford them. And two, my sense was that they've been pretty systematic.
And again, in some cases, systematic can be very good, but I'm willing to cut some quarters to get this done fast. And I don't know whether that's whether that's their style or not. But again, I don't have a dog in that hunt. I do have one. Yeah, okay, one more thing. Yeah. Just for the record, everybody should note that I used to have about $12,000 worth of stock in SunTrust. It's not worth quite that much anymore. But I won't participate in any discussions on banking relationships because I do have a potential conflict of interest.
Okay, Denny.
Two things just to add with Danny down there. I thought it was I had a very comfortable feeling sitting across the table with the two folks that we talked to. In fact, they brought in the head of the municipal banking for SunTrust while we were there, and we got to meet him also. But, I have no stock in SunTrust unless some of I have mutual funds, so there might be some SunTrust stock in there. I do not know. But anyway, I don't have any control over it. But again, I felt fairly comfortable with them. There's other banks. I'm sure we would be looking at a competitive situation. But one of the things that got me that I would like to have ask of legal counsel here is that we were told about the safety of deposits. And a very comforting thing was told us is that a bank that has a deposit from the municipality, and correct me Dan if I'm wrong here when I'm saying it, has to back that with 110% of deposits of some type of a security like treasuries or something with the state of Georgia. Now, can anybody reassure me on that or anything? That's just
that's what it said.
That's what it was said, and I just want to make sure that I understood what was said.
Yes, sir. They have to back it under state law, but what you're going to find is that your finance manager is not going to keep the money there. There is a fund that is set up by the state that your finance manager is going to probably ask you to put all your money into, and it's a floating fund, and what they'll do is they'll manage your money on a daily basis with about three or four different approved funds. They're approved by the state for you to put your money into, and then your finance manager will manage it based on who's paying the most per day, and they'll start flipping your funds from place to place to place in those four approved and protected funds to try to make you to maximize the market rate of your daily float on your money.
Okay. Thank you. Danny?
At least until we get a city manager on board, I don't think this council is really organized or built to manage a bunch of people to do that. And I would, I'd like to amend one thing that Robert said in his recommendation. I'd like to have one group to work with as opposed to having two groups to work with. Not breaking the thing in two. I think that we really need to have a group that we can direct to get the implementation plan going, and I think that one group should be able to handle that. If he might want to bring in somebody from the outside to assist him, but, that would be under his directive, not ours.
Yeah, Danny.
In the timeline, that's a very good point from Councilman Royce. I'll get used to calling y'all a councilman here before the end of the term. But the whole idea that brings us down is that I was talking to the gentleman who gave me some advice on this, who's kind of involved in this kind of stuff, told me, he said, when you start sending out an RFP, he recommended an RFQ, which is a shorter document, and I will be the first guy to admit that I've never written an RFQ, but I could probably scratch one out, that it's anywhere from 1 to 2 pages at max. It's like a 10 working day turnaround time to come back with some basic plan, come back with three things basically, and the three things are what's your experience, who are your people, what's their background, number two, what is your financial and expertise backing, and number three, what is your plan. And from that, you select from that, and then you sit down and negotiate, i.e. dollar amounts. I guess dollar amounts can be part of that plan, but they don't have to be, and you can go from there. I wonder if we really need two individual groups, one to do the, you know, how we do this and the RFPs, RFQs, whether whichever one you want to call them, and secondly, whether we really need, you know, someone to be our headhunters, or if that is necessary, or if that same concern can do that. And again, I want to confirm to the council that I have no, I did not know Don Boynton, Boynton until about. I'll rehearse that. I didn't know Don Boynton until he addressed us the first time. So, you know, and nor do I have any financial dealings whatsoever with their company. So, just as a disclaimer.
Could I ask council a question? In regards to the public comment and the wicked email that's been making its rounds regarding, as I understand, professional services, if we are to hire a professional services firm in one way or another, Slavin is a different story because we haven't hired them. Citizens for Dunwoody did. Council has not. As I understand, we're going to be presented at some point from Citizens for Dunwoody to pay Slavin for their work. So that's how that drew out. But in this particular case, what is the process that we can go through if we are going to map this out to a project management firm?
Well, I think that you have to, and I think that what you have to do is you have to be careful of what you ask Boykin International to do. Because I believe in part of the proposal, they had wanted to reserve the right to bid themselves on different pieces of the project. And I think that if you're going to have them, it's the function, their function is going to be to put out your request for qualifications and or your request for proposal into the evaluation of that process. That you're what you're end up doing is you're going to preclude them from being a bidder to the process. So if your intent is to allow them to be a bidder into putting together your city, if that is your will, that you want a project manager to come in and project manage the startup, then I would say that you should not hire them to do the request for proposal, because of what I assume that you're doing is you're asking for a request for proposal to come in and project manage the startup of your city. So you end up putting them in a place they can't bid if you ask them to do the bid work.
Well, is a request for proposal required for project management with the scope that we're outlining now for someone to help organize is basically what it is?
No, it's not. But I think that what you do is you build an inherent problem when you're bidding it out and you let one of the bidders also be the proposer of the bid.
Okay. So, my next question would be, I see this as kind of an endless, how could we get someone to write a bid unless we bid that out, unless some of us know how to write a bid?
You know, I've seen it's kind of... You don't have a perfect contract. A services contract, you can just have a sole solicit, for lack of a better word. What you have to make sure is in it, you don't cast roads or public works, but they can do an RFP, let one, to do roads and public works. But they cannot do... those are the two restrictions you have, which must be having... specific RFP process are those two items.
Okay, Robert.
You may have answered Ken's question. I'm not sure you quite answered mine, or his question maybe sparked me to have another question. I'm not sure that this council is looking to send out bids for startup. I don't know that we have the time for that. So the first part of my question is, is there anything improper about us just identifying a group, a consulting group, to provide us with startup assistance?
No.
And then using that firm to help us send out RFPs with the proviso that they are for city services like, finance or whatever, with the proviso that they would be precluded from bidding on any of the things that they are... helping us to run the RFP on.
What you said is exactly correct.
Okay.
The problem is, as I understand their initial proposal, it included reservations of rights to bid.
Yes. No longer in the proposal.
Yeah, and we would ensure that...
No longer in the proposal.
That would be a problem, and we would make sure that we wouldn't put ourselves way down in that position.
Sure. No, if you simply wanted them to go out and do a startup, as long as it didn't have the public works components in it, you can hire them without going through any other process if that's your desire.
They can let out the public works.
They could let out a public works and manage that as long as they did that under the state law.
Okay, Tom.
So is there any strict time frames like in state law or anything like that on timings, what we can require for an RFP or an RFQ? I mean, is there a set mandate limit?
There are on public works, but not on anything else.
Okay, and it's a matter
of fairness. It's 15 days of advertising.
Yeah, you have to have at least... And roads is also considered public. Okay. Roads and public works.
So 15 days of advertising, but then is there any mandated turnaround time? Like we advertise it, but then...
You need to think in terms of you need to have about a good 6-week lead time on public works kind of thing. But that's not going to be, probably that's not going to be something you have to worry about up front. Okay. Except to the extent for something like emergency patching or something along those lines.
Councilman? It's
something I probably should know, but I don't know. Public Works is like a deluxe sandwich. Is there by law a defined group of services under Public Works?
Yes. It's $100,000 worth of, but it's structural. You have to actually have a structure or a building. You actually have infrastructure. And roads is $20,000 of any federal road improvement.
John?
I would like to remind the council that we have a public works or a capital project that will need to be done in front of the school on Womack. So keep that in mind. It'll have to be done relatively soon.
Give me a estimate on the cost.
No, I have no idea what the cost is, and I don't know how to engineer it. We'd have to look into how to do that.
Okay. The one comment that I did not email, just a comment on the sanitation, I would like to try to avoid a 12-month or a multi-year just to keep our options open on that side of it. So just something to be cognizant of, up for discussion, obviously. Any other comments?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, two things that we may want to talk about at some point. One is, I know that Boyka is here, and I know he's prepared a revised proposal. We may want to give him an opportunity to speak, although it's up to him. The second is that we did meet with the county on Friday, and it may be appropriate to update the council on those discussions. And I don't know if there's a place on the agenda for that, but since you brought up the issue of
city implementation of the agreement.
Yeah, since you brought up the issue of the intergovernmental agreements, this may be a good place to talk about that.
Okay, let's start backwards at the cab. Danny, you want to breathe? Better you than I.
we met with the DeKalb County officials. Ann Kimbrough was she's the chairman of that group, is in charge of the transition team. At this meeting, we had Dr. Bell for the first time, and I thought it was a very productive meeting. We were given names of the businesses, a file of the businesses, although there's more information that we need there. We still don't have all the last year's taxes. We don't have it broken down by whether they're liquor licenses or other business licenses, things that we need, but those things I'm sure will be forthcoming, and they seem to be trying to be very helpful in getting that done. We went through a number of discussions, some of them having to do with host and other things, and we're probably going to need some help in terms of legal help in terms of what the host really means and what it doesn't. We got Dr. Bell's version of it at the meeting. I think we'll get from them a proposal which would include the police. We gave them a suggestion on how they would charge us for the IGA on police being taking their all-in budget, which is about $108 million for the entire police staff, and dividing that by the number of people that they have performing police functions, which is about 1,229 people, and coming up with a per cost of an officer, all-in cost, and then letting us, I think as Robert coined, buy the policeman by the drink, where we buy 1 to 28 or 29 or whatever number we want, times the number of the all-in cost of the police force. And that's one of the things that they're considering. We have our next meeting Thursday afternoon at 1:30 with them. So we're moving that ahead as quick as we can.
Just to add a couple of specifics that I think may be worthwhile, they did suggest to us that using their calculations, they would continue to provide police for basically $500,000 a month. We would get the same service we have gotten in the past. So their opening stance was that $500,000 a month gets you what you get to be part of the county police operations. A second thing that may be worth noting is we did have some discussions with them about the county perhaps being our billing agents for this first time around for both liquor licenses and for business licenses. They would give us a per-piece cost of what it would take for them to issue our invoices with our logo on the top. In other words, to substitute their logo for ours and to be our billing agent, and they'll give us a per-piece cost for that. We did get confirmation that the county has not sent out any liquor invoices at all. However, the state has. And the people who've identified that they've gotten some liquor bills, those are the state annual invoices, a small amount of money that the
$200.
State...
$200.
Yeah, a couple hundred dollars per year that the state charges. So they haven't sent out any liquor license bills, and they have already segregated the Dunwoody and the rest of the bills. So whether we use them for billing or not, they won't be sending any bills to Dunwoody businesses for liquor licenses. So we at least got that established. Was there anything else?
I think that I covered it. Okay. On the Mr. Boykin, do you want to give us a quick update on what you handed out?
We met with Brian last Thursday. Brian shared with us some of the conversations that apparently several council members have had or had. And then we had Robert's summary on Saturday. Most of the things that he highlights in his proposal are very much the same with the new proposal that you have. Let me start out by thanking each of you for the opportunity to assist you, to be here with you. I know it's a lot of hard work that each of you have gone into and done, and we appreciate it. We want to participate with you going forward. The meeting that we had with Brian on Thursday helped outline a proposal, and I'll walk you through several of the key things with the proposal. It's more of a, I'll call it a concept baseline approach. And it's very similar to what Robert has outlined, where we are facilitating the hiring of either consultants or vendors in order to facilitate the city services with a minimal amount of staff members. And that is specifically the target. Now, the places that we differ with Roberts is that we would anticipate the IT manager should be a hired consultant. We find that the IT, if you put in a high-level IT person, which is the type of person you want running your entire system, it's a very expensive employee. Where if you hire a firm, you can get somebody that's going to be your, in essence, your day-to-day manager, just your help desk with your staff, and have somebody else at the higher level taking care of the overall management of the system, and I think that's probably a good use of your money by going outside for that. HR, one of the things that we have in our business, unless you have 80 employees, you don't need an HR, you hire it outside. Since we're going to have 7 employees, having HR in-house, I would suggest that maybe that's something we want to hire as an outside consultant. The other thing I think I picked up in the proposal that Robert had was DeKalb, using DeKalb County for building permits and inspections. That could be done, or it could be an outside service too. More indications and research. So there are vendors out there, and since we spoke with you last, we've had a number of people come and make themselves familiar to us. There are a number of people that have volunteered people to talk to. I also talked with John Flint over the weekend from Weston. Learned quite a bit about how he set up his city and how they have now got a major contractor, brought in a few more city employees. They have a lot of similarities to what we're trying to do. They have a lot of things that are some things that are different. And he's very helpful and is probably a good resource that we'll probably tap into, as well as other city managers that we find around in the state of Georgia or Florida. I'd like for you to go to tab 3 in the proposal. Tab 3 starts with a page, similar to this. You'll find that the green boxes are, in essence, the city employees that were outlined to us when we started talking with, or coming out of our meeting with Mr. Anderson. And these, again, you've heard some discussions of code enforcement. Again, code enforcement is something that you can probably do outsource or you can do in-house. It will become the council's choice in how they want to pursue that. But essentially, you have the key leaders of each of the different departments, and then the rest of it would be vendors. Now, we have scoped preliminarily different packages of things underneath each of these different vendors. This does not mean this is the total number of vendors we're looking for. This is just the first run at it. We would then go back in and scope these packages, trying to group like things to make it easier and better for us to create an RFP in order to go out to the marketplace and collect the right type of qualified firms, as well as then the lowest bidder. One of the things that I want to stress to you that I've heard a lot of discussions where we're talking about, you know, staffing requirements. There's a key thing here that you need to be well aware of. Your policies and procedures are paramount in order making sure that you've got a consistent way that you're going to run your government and how you're going to run your city. If you don't have your procedures in place, every vendor is going to try to overlay their procedures on you. And I think you will then only cause yourself more grief for your city manager and others. One of the first things that we intend to do as part of the process that we've outlined to you is establish those procedures using best practices from the surrounding cities and counties, if they're available, that are alike. And bring those so that we have a way that all together we have a consistent policy and procedures on how you want to run your county or your city. And then be able to use those as the baseline for each one of these RFPs and RFQs that go out to the marketplace. That way, they'll be proposing on our scope and our requirements, not on what they want to overlay. To try to put that in perspective, if I turn around and tell a designer that I want to have a city hall, I want to have room for 20 people to be in the city hall, and I want to have an administrative area, and I want to have a courtroom area, I'll get lots of different designs for a city hall. If I don't tell them anything more than that, all those designs will be right, but none of them will satisfy what you want. It is important that you have the procedures, how you want to do business, how you want things to move through your city in order to make sure that the vendors are going to do what you want them to do as opposed to doing what they want to do. And that's why that's one of the first tasks, one of the first things we start overlaying, as well as doing other things in parallel to it. But it's a key when we go out to talk with vendors. We want to make sure we've got your procedures and your policies in place before we go hire any of these vendors. What I'd like for you to do now is go to Exhibit B. We put together a preliminary timeline people. Now, I mentioned again before, you know, his first task is to get a city manager involved. His date is 11-14. That is the date that works in with this, because we'll be at that point in time is when we're going to start needing to make decisions. Now, I heard some discussion here about police chief, whether the city manager is involved or not. One of the things that I understood from several people over at Sandy Springs, the one mistake that they said they made, they wish they could do over again, is they hired the police chief before they hired the city manager. They don't want to do that. They tell us, and they recommend, make sure you have your city manager first, and he hires your police chief. And I've gotten that from councilmen, and I've gotten that from also the workers, the folks inside the city. So I want to just share that with you as a lesson learned, so that as we're going forward, we keep that lesson in mind. But this timeline, it's, I believe it's just 3 pages, but it outlines a lot of the tasks and how we're doing a lot of things parallel in order to try to make things happen, and working with whoever you select as the city attorney, and helping them wherever we can in negotiating any IGAs with the government. We will support them. We're not going to want to take the lead. At least I don't believe that's your desire, taking lead on the negotiation. But we will facilitate and make sure that we get them all the background and the information they need in order to make it work. And that's what we see our role. You'll notice one of the first things in our proposal is a kickoff meeting, where all of you help us decide what your goals and objectives are. And that will happen within days of being selected. Because from those goals and objectives, we will then finalize our plan, finalize our budgets, finalize the scoping of how we deal with vendors and going out and getting those vendors, and putting together whether it's you want to have one vendor do everything, or you want to have multiple vendors, or kind of like the concept approach where you, you award all the little ones, and then you add those up, and then you offer it to a guy to take the whole thing over and see if he's cheaper. That's an interesting concept. I hadn't heard that. We'll have to see how that works. I'd like for you next to go to tab C. What we've identified here is a preliminary budget. Preliminary budget has at one point a little over $1 million worth of contingency. I think it's $1,050,000 contingency, and roughly $4,000 surplus on top of the contingency, the way it's laid out.
$4,000
surplus on top of $1,050,000 contingency. Look at page 3. 3,700. Yeah, that's only because I rolled all the numbers up into the vendor parts. We need to scope what you want accomplished for each of these vendors, and we need to establish what that work is actually worth, and then we need to have that as a budget that we go buy to. And that is a key. We want to make sure that we're buying to a budget, make sure that the level of services you're looking for and you want to achieve is within your budget before we go out to bid. Because if we figure it out after we go out to bid, then we're going to have delays in opening. Delays of turning these things over to vendors. And that's a key. We want to make sure there are no delays. It's part of how we manage projects and scoping the work and making sure we got the right price before we go out to bid. So when the bids come in, 90% of the time, we know what the answer is. There's always that 10% where we don't, bidders will surprise us. But most of the time, they will know what the answers are. We're a firm believer in competition among the different vendors. There will be RFPs that need to be developed, and banking is one of those RFPs. I have worked with different banks throughout my career in business. I have worked it with different other organizations I have. It's very interesting. Banks know how to compete. They do the exact same thing that any private vendor does. They'll tell you a price when they're dealing with you and they think they're the only ones there. Then when they find out somebody else is there, then all of a sudden things get a little bit cheaper or less expensive. I shared with Danny on Friday, or Danny rather, on Friday, some conversations we had when I was on the building construction committee building the recent expansion at Dunwoody Country Club. We were getting pricing from lenders at under prime, and it was 1 to 1.25 under prime at the time. Because they wanted that business, because it's a low-risk business. There's a way you can scope it. There's a way you get good quality banks to go on RFQ to make sure you only get the ones that you want, that they're firm and strong, and then you make sure that you have an equal playing field in what they propose. There's a way to do this, and that's part of what we want to help you do. Other things are facility locations. There's multiple places in our city where a city hall and a police station could be located. I know there's a preference inside of the village area. There are other places in the village area which could compete. I know you, some of you have already looked at one of those places. I think I've stated Warren Jolly's is probably a very nice place to be. But we also want to make sure that Mr. Jolly is competing with others as opposed to he's the only game in town. Accounting and processing of payments. This can be a RFP package. Zoning and planning can be an RFP package. I again would suggest that IT and HR should be IT or vendor packages. And the transportation and city management ought to be vendor packages. These are all things that we can package together in light services and be able to get competitive bids on. We also took a look at your taxes. And I have your draft of your first tax bill. You can pass around. City of Dunwoody alcohol license renewals. So you can change it, you can raise the price off whatever, but it's a draft where we'll get started. One of the first things we'll do is have our one of our people sit in the cab and get that list that Robert has already talked about where they've broken it out. And we'll go verify where those folks are and make sure that we collect their money. You remember when I spoke with you last, the first thing you do in any type of project or turnaround is get a hold of the cash. And then you get a hold of the expenses, and then you manage both. And that's what we want to do, is help you get a hold of the cash. Any questions?
I had an advantage the others didn't have. I got this about 2 hours before the meeting. And they didn't get it until they walked in the room. So I actually got a chance to read parts of it. I did a good job. And there's three things I think I want to point out. There's a lot of little things that I've got marked up, and at some point you and I should sit down and you know.
I would love
to. My sense is that your vision and my vision are coming rapidly together. I get the sense that we're getting closer to the same place. The three things I want to mention. One is, throughout the document, you guys talk about doing stuff. And every time I read it, I kept thinking, no, I really want them to assist the city manager in doing that. My expectation is that the city manager is going to come on board, and you're going to be working for him, and he's going to be directing your actions. And pretty consistently, much of the stuff that you guys are saying you will do, I want you to be his right hand or her right hand person, helping them do it. And a perfect example of that is the policies and procedures. I don't want you guys going out and finding best practices, policies, and procedures. I want the city manager to be deciding, this is how we're going to establish our policies and procedures. You guys go out there and help me do that. You know, well, I know that this particular city has good policies and procedures for this kind of thing. In other words, just as a general rule, sort of as an overview, I'm hoping we're going to get a city manager in here real quick. And I'm hoping they're going to be the point person for much of this, and you're going to become, their staff in some sense, with special emphasis on the startup. Does that make certain sense?
Absolutely, and I agree that while it may be written that we're going to do it, we anticipate that we're going to be doing it as responsible. But I also want to caution you something. It took us a year and a half to write the state construction manual for the state of Georgia. And they supposedly had all their policies and procedures in place. It is not something that a city manager, the first day out of the box, is going to spend a whole lot of time. So, we want to collect that information, have that. We want to use, whether it's Mr. Riley's farm or anybody else who's got those policies and procedures, and start with a baseline that can be then proof, read, massage, and then when he comes in, all he's got to do is just proofread and massage as opposed to creating from scratch. That's when I talk about we're going to do certain things, and that's our intent.
The second thing that I think needs to be at least brought up for everybody's attention is that guys, the price tag has gone up here. The last time we were talking to Boykin, it was around $275,000. They're now estimating $575,000. And that seems like an awful lot of money.
Well, we've also increased the time frame by 4 months. One of the things in the feedback we've gotten, preliminarily, we only specced out for the first 3 months, and then based on what other activities there were going to be, because of the number of people hiring and so forth, and the old method that was being done, and we'd be sitting with you in December and scoping out what the additional work was. In this case, based on what we learned from Brian, when we met with him, he asked that we put a window where we worked ourselves out of a job. And we believe that we will be working ourselves out of a job by the end of March, potentially as late as the end of April. So we put it in there. You are paying just whatever the actual cost is at the reduced rates. Unless you tell us to go out and do something else that's not anticipated or whatever, and we need to adjust the budget, that's where it is.
Yeah, Dave. What kind of notification would you want on terminating the agreement if we saw that you were getting it done faster or from your side and from our side?
We had preliminary conversations with Brian as far as how to structure that, because we're also preparing a preliminary agreement for him to, in fact, I think you got a copy of it over the weekend, so that he can mark it up and deal with that. I mean, there's certain things that we would like as far as certain days. There are certain things that if you're going to take it up, let's say we're having you're having a problem with us, you may need 60 days in order to terminate, so there's a gradual work through to get to somebody else to do it. If we're going ahead with termination for convenience, I don't think we even talked about the number of days on that. We're very flexible in how we'll pull all that together.
One other thing, just for your information, our charter reads that the city manager is the one that has to hire the police chief, and that's
good.
My charter. So.
Good. Well, that's Ken's task by delivering the 14th. We're not going to let Ken off that.
John. Mr. Boykin, this is a paper document. Do you have one available electronically for us?
I do. This is a preliminary document for you guys to review, comment, and do whatever you want as far as giving us feedback. We'll modify it. If you want to make that a public record, we'll be glad to hand it back to you. Or if you want us to update it based on your comments and then make it available to you, we'll do it either way.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Anything else?
Okay, Danny.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Dan.
Mr. Boykin, I got your name pronounced right that time, so I'm moving up in the world. In the Marine Corps, we shorten all names. You just be Boy or somebody like that, or Ken, or,
Don Boy, huh?
Yeah, you'd be somebody. No DI would pronounce your name, so don't worry about it. It wouldn't be that one. I can. But I'm looking here just at the police and the public safety.
Which part are you in?
I'm back here in Exhibit C.
Exhibit C.
Yeah. Over on the left, you've got police officers and you've got staff, and I can't relate that to numbers or anything here. Cars.
33 staff. 33 police officers.
33?
33, yes.
That's total in the police department, or 33?
33 with four admin, I believe, is what we've based on. We haven't adjusted this part of the budget based on the discussion we had in the past. And we had some additional notes out here on the previous budget. I believe it's 33 officers. That includes the chief. And it's either two or four administrative people.
And include, the four are included in that 33 number?
No, the four would be over above 33.
Okay, so this would be, and if I could ask Councilman Taylor to jump in here a little bit, this would be the police chief, the heads of the department, of whether we have one or two or three lieutenants and something like that, or is that just 33 walking the beat?
No, it's police chief, I believe. Now, I'm going to get my rankings wrong. I think there's a lieutenant, there's a, three sergeants, there is a number of undercover or what they call non-uniformed officers, yes. And then there's a certain amount of officers that are on uniform patrol in the streets. And I believe the officers on the streets are either 12 or 17. I have it in some notes that I've got back from my office.
At the end of the day, what we're going to have to rely on is the police chief. This, you know, really, I mean, we can look at, you know, snapshots like this, but whoever the city manager hires is going to come in, is going to make a recommendation for that and try to justify that budget. And, you know, we can go over numbers here ad infinitum, but at the end of the day, you know, you're going to have a professional come in and hopefully tell us what they need.
One of, if I might add another thing, one of the things I talked with John Flint a little bit about in depth over this weekend, he's the gentleman you referred me to at Weston. When they number or try to figure out how many police they needed, originally they started off at one per thousand, and they got it down to one, or it's 0.8 per thousand officers. And I believe 33, using 37,500 as our population, 33 is in that range. And I felt comfortable that, at least in the preliminary research we did on the size and police staff, that we were in the right range. One thing I do want to reiterate is that nowhere in our proposal does it talk about us doing or participating in the RFPs as one of the bidders. That was an initial discussion that we had with Brian, and after we had our discussions and some of his concerns, we just got.
Okay, any other questions?
Sorry. Well, there's one thing that would be very helpful here.
Okay.
I poured over a great length Dan Webb's budget. That was based on a whole bunch of different assumptions. But it would be very nice to see a comparison of this budget to that budget. I note that they're radically different in many ways, and it would help if we could have sort of a side-by-side comparison of how he had laid out funds and where he was expecting to spend money and where this budget has money being spent. Is that something you guys could put together?
I can very briefly tell you that all the people that you have listed on the top part in the budget, go to the first page,
staff.
Where it says it's staff, yeah, those are all numbers that came out of his numbers. He's using city norms for salaries. These balancing numbers down here are all his numbers as well as a baseline. The only difference is when we went to get the headcount, it was $1.5 million in order to get people to the CH Stonehill headcount. And I rolled those up into this, into these numbers here. I did not adjust anything out of his budget regarding finance and administration. All I did was take one person out of there and put them up underneath the city employee, which would be the what we call the city administrative person.
I don't have it in front of me, but I'm pretty sure he didn't have $10 million for finance administration.
No, that's a summary of the two pairs.
Okay. All right. That makes more sense. All right, but it still would be helpful if you could do that.
All right, Andy.
Don, I'd like to see this budget one little tweak in the thing. I'd like to have a reserve fund set up of 10%, which would be about $1.5 million in my view. I think maybe I'd like to do that at the expense of taking it out of some of these other services then that you've got allocated. I just think it's very prudent for us to have a reserve fund of that size, particularly with the economic situation, the budgets, a lot of things happening. And I think a 10% level is one that we ought to strive to have. And I'd like to see that $1 million number that you have increased to $1.5 million at the expense of reducing the cost that you see in some of the services down below.
And that's fine. We can work towards that. Again, when we get to the vendor side and scoping all the vendors and then estimating what each one of those vendors should be a cost, well then, if there's surplus funds, we'll move it down to that line. If there's not enough funds, then we're going to have to talk with you about the level of service that are provided in order to make sure we don't approach
it. I'd like that service level to be defined to work within those numbers that you come up with about a $1.5 million number.
I understand that, but that's part of, once we're hired, that's part of what we're doing.
Yeah.
And part of the process, obviously, from us would be where do we want to cut.
We'll set the budget.
Okay, any other questions, Danny?
Yeah, just one other thing to address one of Robert's concerns. when we were working on the other previous proposed agreement, was that July 1st, things aren't going as good. One of the things we would like to have is that if we cut something, we'd like to have a numerical number on it rather than just, you know, we'll work that out when we get there, you know, get what I mean. What I'm trying to say is I'm looking for some black and white numbers here that, you know, if we have to pull back on anything across the spectrum, what it would be that we would be saving, like per unit cost almost, if I'm with you. Is that something that's too detailed at this stage of the game, or is that too detailed down the road? Or?
It's not too detailed down the road. At this stage of the game, it is too detailed. Part of the kickoff meeting is to find what your goals and your objectives are, of which we then tailor around your basic plan approach on how you achieve those. And once we have that level of understanding of what all of you want to achieve, that's when we start refining numbers, refining scopes, and refining pieces of this in order to make sure that your level of services match your budget. If they don't, then we come back to you and start talking to you about that.
So as of right now, you know, the numbers that we see here are really not numbers that we can go to the bank with. Would that be kind of a fair statement?
I wouldn't go to the bank with it because I'm not comfortable that I understand what John wants to do versus what you want to do versus what Danny wants to do versus Robert or Tom want to do as far as accomplishing how you want this city run. I've heard a lot of discussions what you guys want to do sitting in these council meetings. Some of it's conflicting. And part of this kickoff meeting is to put us all on the same page to make sure that we're no longer conflicted from that point in time. While you may have a difference of opinion, as a council, you're going to come together and say, at least for the first 6 months, or how are we going to structure the city, this is the way we're going forward. And that's the purpose of the kickoff meeting, is that we're all on the same page, and that becomes our marching orders to get this done.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
All right. Moving on, item number 4, Mr. Hennigan, would you tackle that for you?
The website. We have been working with Mr. J. Kapp, who's volunteered his services to create the City of Dunwoody website. We have obtained the domain names of dunwoodyga.gov, dunwoodygeorgia.gov. Mr. Kapp has been drafting a basic interim website. This will not be the final website. This is just a very basic interim website to get something up, get a city presence. It'll have a calendar. It'll have a page of the elected officials with email addresses. It'll have an archive with city documents, meeting minutes, city ordinances, other files determined by the city officials. It'll have other resources, links to the cab, to the garbage, to fire and rescue, and anything else that we think we may need. Creating the website is Mr. Kapp will do that for us. The problem after that is that he will not maintain it. We need to upload our own schedule, our calendar. Somebody needs to go onto the website to upload the documents as they become available. It's a relatively point-and-click interface. Somebody on the city council, city clerk, somebody could do that for us. We could all be taught to do it, get usernames and passwords, and all have the responsibility to do it if we're so allowed. If the city council, city attorney, and city clerk, I guess that's all of our employees at the moment, are not capable of doing it, Mr. Kapp can do it at a cost of $90 per hour. The website will be hosted for free until January 31st, 2009. After that point, it's a $45 per month to keep the interim site on his servers. Email. Public records requests will come in where they're looking for our emails. Currently, we are all using separate email systems, whether it be somebody's work, whether it be your home or other system. In order to maintain a proper open records system, we need to be using an email system which saves and maintains all emails so that the individual doesn't have the ability to delete. There's a proposal by Mr. Kapp that we use a hosted exchange service. The cost for 10 email accounts is $145 a month for 10 accounts. We would all have our own email account, firstname.lastname@dunwoodyga.gov. You would have interfaces. You would be taught how to probably load it on your own computer in the sense of Outlook or however you normally get email. You would have a webmail access. If we wanted to get access via BlackBerry or other pocket devices, there's additional license fees. For BlackBerry license, it's $10 per user. Other systems are $15 per user if you want to go to a Windows-based service. But the website should be available to the public no later than November 1st. Hopefully, if we go with this system that you have in front of you, that we would have email addresses, hopefully by that time for each of you. You would each be taught on how to get and retrieve your email. You probably should forward all past emails to that service in order to go back in history to the time in which you were sworn in. You have the information in front of you. Is there any questions that I could answer?
Any questions, Your Honor?
You know, how do we pay for it? Then, you know, it's time for us to do some of this stuff.
I got the .gov, so that's $250.
That's right.
Future expense.
That's right. Report. That was on your credit card. We had to pay for the domains in advance, and that's on your credit card, and I'll pay for the $145 a month for the first couple months, until which time as I can submit.
Okay.
You know, I'll handle the $145 a month. But again, the question then comes into BlackBerry service, laptops. I mean, it's a matter of how do you want to retain or obtain your email. And again, the website will have your published dunwoody.gov email addresses. We can have this all up by November 1st. It's just a matter of, is this the way you want to go? This is the way Jay thinks is the best, safest way we should do our email. The website is just a basic. It's a shell. It'll be changed 6 months, a year from now. That's a given. But it's a service. It's available. And we can post what we want on there. But again, we need to be trained to do it. We'll all have usernames, passwords, control of it. Or we can, again, let somebody else do it, or we can let Mr. Kapp do it. But again, it's uploading the documents, creating the information.
Diddy.
Yeah, I just a couple points. I wonder, as we go down and if we go through the process here that we're doing in the RFPs, if part of this could be part of the, like the IT.
Absolutely.
Sure.
It will be.
Okay. That's one point. And you know, the other point is basically, you know,
I'm getting questions right now, you know, and I'm sure all of you are. Where can I find the city website, you know? And I just told them to call Councilman Hennigan personally.
There's lots of options. This is the fast startup to get us to November. If we want 6 months down the road to get a Microsoft Exchange server owned by the city, controlled by the Dunwoody IT contractor, we can easily switch over at that point. There'll be archives of all email. It'll be saved. It'll be an easy switch over from at which point we want to contract it all out in the future. But we need to start moving and get some system in place. One other little nitpick is the fact that there's so many different file types and documents. We're receiving documents the day before a meeting in different formats, and we're printing it all out, and we're jumbling a lot of stuff. At some point, I would hope that the city would probably buy the city council laptops at some point, because right now it is rather difficult to print out all this paper. I would much rather have a system that's not my home system and not my work system, to have something totally separate and controllable by the city, maintained by the city IT staff at some point. We shouldn't mix systems together.
Amen. Danny?
I just have one comment. I think, John, what you've outlined is sufficient for our interim needs here. I set up a website for my campaign, and I can attest that it doesn't take a rocket scientist to do downloads and things, so I think we should be sufficient to get the things up that people need to look at and have one place to go to, and I commend you for getting this thing done.
And Danny, thank you for volunteering for doing all
no,
that.
No, no.
I just
didn't say
problem solving. I also want to thank John for getting the ball rolling. I think we need to get this online, you know, to get all the particulars worked out down the road. Yes, we'll do that. But let's get started. You know, let's kind of like running a 26-mile race. First step, if you don't get started, you're never going to get there. The other thing is, personally, as far as controlling the system, managing the system, I personally, you know, would like probably the long run to have someone else be doing that other than each one of us individually, unless Councilman Ross thinks it's such an easy job.
I said initially. Okay. 3 months. No more than 3 months. How about that? May I suggest that everybody email John, go ahead and do the Exchange server.
Okay.
If you can, just email John if you have a special requirement, whether it's BlackBerry or something else. Read John's document, and that way let's get that going. We have to have that Exchange server. The website's being done. The .gov's going to be up in 2 weeks, and then we're in business.
Correct.
So,
first name, dot last name. I mean, this will be setting policy for the next 50 years in the sense of, you know, email addresses. Is that acceptable? Is that the standard norm? Okay. I just want to make sure that we want to, before I go forward, that it's discussed.
Our main email address can be done with g8.gov.
That's correct.
And everything else will be routed to that number, right?
Yes. Everything can be routed and mirrored at other locations, whether you use DunwoodyGeorgia.gov or DunwoodyGA.gov, or if somebody in the community wanted to donate DunwoodyGA.net to us, we could mirror that site so that it automatically feeds over. But our main address will be DunwoodyGA.gov.
I think that's a great idea to have the other ones mirrored, and I think there was a gentleman at one of our meetings. We'll get that. Yeah, good.
Okay, any other discussion on that? All right, moving forward on number five. Tom, can you give us...
I'll do it real quick. Looks like look at the clock back there. It's 20 till 10. Police options, I'm going to give a full report within the next couple of meetings, but basically we've had an unsolicited option offered to us from DeKalb Sheriff's Department, Tom Brown, to provide police services under an IGA. I'm meeting with him this week. I haven't set the time, date and time for the meeting, but he's trying to work out his schedule. I'll just report back on that.
Okay.
Just providing the bodies. If you remember, Tom Brown did do a great job out here. We had a tornado providing people and all. That's just another option to throw up there to bounce off of the cap. The other option is the IGA with the Cap County, which is right now about $500K a month, which you want to get out for that as quickly as possible. You know, as soon as we get a city manager on board, you start that police chief search and then hiring process. I'll present the conclusions to the City Council based on this. The other thing that we've had in the short term that maybe a utility to the city manager and police chief when they come on board is this Bill Hurd bankruptcy. They had a lot of police-equipped cars, not with the lights or anything, but the police packages sitting there on their lots, and those are available through three government purchasing programs right now that can get those at a reduced price, possibly the next, you know, in the next month or two, if we were to move on that. Everything else, basically, what we need to do is they've got a lot of financing options for those where they can defer payments. We could actually order them in November or December, but not start paying for them later down the line, these long-term leases. The big thing is we're hearing a lot of numbers batting around for police. You've got 33, 28, 45. At the end of the day, we're going to hire a professional that's going to tell us what he needs to see if we can make that fit within our budget. The one thing I'll just say before we go too low on the police thing, not budget-wise, but manpower-wise, I want to urge, and I'll give a guided tour, because there's Dunwoody, and then there's the borders of Dunwoody. John did a great pin map the other day with the areas where there's high crime. And, you know, a lot of that's concentrated around the mall. But I'd be glad to give people a tour around the apartment complexes at Winter's Chapel and Peachtree Industrial. There's three apartment complexes there that contain 10% of the population of Dunwoody in numbers. There are illegal clubs in there that are operating till 4 a.m., pouring liquor. There's open prostitution, open drug dealing, all that's going on right now. I'd like you guys, if you want to come out and take a ride with John and I and come see that, if you think you're going to cut the police down to 26 or 28 feet.
So,
I mean, it's not what we think of as Dunwoody, but we're responsible for it. It's in the boards that we have.
Thank you, Tom. And please don't join the Convention and Visitors Bureau with your or take that tour off.
I have a question.
Yes, John.
Tom, can you tell us about the cars? What research have we done? I saw somewhere somebody made the suggestion to me. Are we looking at hybrid vehicles? We're not going to have a whole lot of police chases. I just wanted to ask the question, have we ever looked into it? Have we spec'd anything out as far as the needs of the department? Because gas, if we're going to...
Have we looked at hybrid cars? Now, again, it's going to be up to the police chief.
Right.
What Doraville has just gone to, keeping the old cars or the six-cylinders, and the Dodges actually are an eight-cylinder, but they don't engage other cylinders until you really push the thing through the floor. But what Doraville has just gone to is they've gone out and invested in bikes, and all their cars have bike racks now. So when they go to some place like Dunwoody Village, they get off, they get out of the car and get on the bike, things like that.
I guess I'm also looking at the fact of take-home cars and the fuel costs and just trying to average everything out if
again,
everything is budget-related.
Again, what we're going to have is the police chief come in and pitch what he wants. That we're going to approve the budget, but operationally, again, they're going to pitch what they think they need.
Right.
And we approve that budget-wise, make suggestions, and that's part of that process. But at the end of the day, none of us are really police professionals, and you got to rely on somebody to come in and do that. And I mean, they're going to have to negotiate for assets with us. But at the end of the day, they're going to set it up and make those recommendations. So.
Okay. Any other? Yeah, Dan.
Just a quick thing, Councilman Taylor. It seems to me that even though we want to wait for the police chief to give us, you know, how he wants to set this thing up, which I firmly believe in. No, but there are certain factors, i.e. Cars, i.e. some of the long lead items here, that it seems to me, no matter who the police chief is, and whether he's got a Chevy or a Ford, and if you take a look at the hybrid cost factors versus the other one, those are things that it seems like maybe the police chief doesn't really have to be right there deciding every little nit and granny. Am I off base here or what?
It's called meddling.
It's called meddling.
So,
they didn't want to be involved.
The short answer, I mean, at the end of the day, the charter makes us policymakers, not operators. The budgetary process, if you've gone through with the TOD for the Marine Corps and everything, you're going to get your inputs, but at the end of the day, you don't always get exactly what you want. That's a negotiating process between the operational manager and the city council.
So going out and just... seeing what's out there and having options?
Oh, no. I've gone out. I will present in the next couple of days some of the options on these cars and everything. I mean, we'll have stuff before us, before we ever get a police chief on board, to help us do staff work and research that. So that's what that, yep, the more you have.
Okay. Any other discussion? All right, moving on. Brian, number one, discussion of proposed Chapter 18 Municipal Court of City Code to adopt and approve Chapter 18 of the City Code. Like, kind of review, any comments? I didn't see any comments with these emails on. Does anybody have anything? Okay. Number two, discussion of proposed Chapter 9 Ethics of the City Code ordinance to adopt and approve Chapter 9 of the City Code.
Well, two things that we have suggested. One is the addition of each council member giving the mayor a selection of two nominees for the mayor to select from. It's non-binding, but we would add in that each council member can give the mayor two names from which he may consider his nominees from, was one of your comments, and we try to adjust that. We'll add that in. Another one is a prohibition of contracts which council members have an interest in. We'll put a dollar amount in that. We'll cap it, say, at $2,500, an absolute prohibition of any contract over that amount or any amount you want to specify. We have not yet come up with a Jesse Roberts best way of having an intermediary before going to the board. Hopefully we'll have a suggestion for that during your future. We don't have one.
Robert?
I did have a conversation with somebody who is involved at the county level, and what he told me they do is they have, like, preliminary hearing. You know, rather than have a gatekeeper, they just provide some mechanism for the board members to throw it out without full consideration. Right? So another opportunity to do that might be to build into the code of ethics something that works like that. Again, I'm not married to any solution except that I don't want us to get bogged down in the ethics board. So.
Any other discussion, Danny?
You know, I've gone over this, and you know, I've already voiced some of my opinions on this, and while all good, well, and true meaning, I also see that one of the uses is going to be for this is going to be political. The same way is that the contribution for ethics and the state ethics is used right now, which I found out real quick on the first day that we were filing for Dunwoody. Yes. All the opposition were down there in the office. You know, I go over this and I look at things and I ask myself, what would the common sense man say to you? What would the common sense man say to you about this? Definition here, benefits mean, number two, anything, regardless of its monetary value, perceived or intended by either the one who offers it or the one to whom it is offered to be a sufficient in value to influence a public servant in the performance or non-performance of official action. You know, now, that has no quantitative terms to it or everything else. I don't know if it was just copied out of somewhere else or what else, but it sounds to me like, you know, it's a boilerplate to me. And, you know, the next one, anything regardless of monetary value, which, under the circumstances, a reasonable, prudent person in the position of public servant to whom the thing is or may be offered would recognize as being likely to be intended to influence, likely intended. You know, those are very, very vague terms that, you know, I can just, well, gosh, it looks like to me that, you know, Councilman so-and-so, he could have been intended to be influenced on that. Yeah, that was a good point, because I had back over here on page two, each councilman appoint one member to controlled or illegal substance, meaning any drug or other substance, the use of which is regulated by federal or state law. Well, you know, tobacco is one of those, and alcoholic beverages are one of those. There's a lot of things. You know, frivolous complaints, you know, insufficient in face. That's one of the, probably one of the things you got to have here, as I told you, you know. Anybody who comes up with a file where I've come from, you know, and makes a sexual harassment charge, and the sexual harassment charge is found to be, if you will, and there are very few of these, by the way, but there are some, found to be, you know, the get-even factor, then stands to stand the same punishment as the person who would have committed the issue. You know, I've gone over this, and I asked myself, is there a person in the world that we couldn't find something in here? You know, reasonably, here's a statement, benefit, personal benefit, reasonable, perceived to be offered or received. What does that mean? I'm sorry, but that is like going in and ordering a deluxe sandwich and just getting your sandwich and walking out. I don't think you have any idea what's in there. Robert brought it up one other time. You know, I noticed that there was a $100 monetary value here on number one, and back on page eight, there's a $250. Yeah, I wrote 101 in there before I saw the 250 back here, because I know 101 is the one, that's the reporting for ethics for the state, and 101 or higher. So that's what I just wrote in there.
100 is a one-time, the 250 was an annual.
Per calendar year? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, well, that's why the difference.
That explains that. I just, you know, as I go through this, I just ask myself, is there somebody in this country that could fulfill every one of these? Is there that person out there that just, yes, it sounds good to put this out to the public and say, there it is, right there. But then, what are we really doing with this? What are we really doing? And I realized by standing up here and talking anything about ethics that don't just say, wow, let's go do it all, let's have 30 more pages. That, you know, I'm putting myself out there, but that's the way I do things. I just ask myself, is all of this necessary? Or is it boilerplate? Or, you know, is it just trying to gotcha? Is it trying to gotcha? That's what I keep asking myself as I read through this. It seems to me like this document could be reduced and condensed immensely and still have the same intent. You know, you can't vote on anything of your own interest. You can't accept anything above a certain value. You know, but to go through here line by line, it seems to me like it's extremely complex, extremely almost, if you would say, unnecessary.
We have what you're saying in the charter, by the way.
Huh?
We have a condensed version of what you're saying.
I know that. Yeah.
Captain Ross. The version that you have is not the one that was presented by the Ethics Committee. It's been redrafted. I can say this, that the one that was presented by the Ethics Committee was consistent with the Georgia Municipal Association standards, the state Georgia law in terms of ethics, and also consistent and equivalent to what other cities in the area, Johns Creek, Milton, Sandy Springs, and others, have in fact incorporated into their code of ethics. I think if there's one thing we do in this, I don't think this is meant to be in a document that is a gotcha type document. We had on our committee an attorney that has spent his whole career both in government and in being a chief ethics officer of corporations that reviewed this document in some detail. And I think we need to have a very strict thing. It's going to require that everybody be educated, and this thing contemplated that every year there would be a training session for new employees and existing employees to update them on the ethics code. But I don't think we need to have there's no way to express in, you know, two words, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. There are no 10 things that I can put out there that's going to be encompassing enough, but I do think that we've got a mechanism here that will solve some of the problems that you have, that being the ethics board. In the process that we go through there, solve the problem. I think to do anything less than what we have here would be, in fact, not meeting the requirements that our citizens have put us here for. And this thing has been left over, in my estimation, by people who understand the ethics law as well as the what's required by the state and what's been done by the municipalities.
Yeah, I'm sorry, John.
So, Danny, what we have in front of us, is this tougher or easier than what the committee put out? The committee worked on this, the community came together and worked on this document or a document, and now we're getting this. Is this what they worked on? Is it tougher, easier?
The document we worked on was a 33-page document, and it had some 6 or 7 pages of definitions. And that's the way most legal documents like this have. I would assume that that's what you use to codify this.
This is 99% of what the document was. What I did was restructure the way it looks. I put the definition section in the beginning.
Right.
Put the severability section at the end. All the definitions that were in your version are in this version. I think I may have underlined the ones that were not in the version that I was looking at, just as a comparison. But all the definitions you had exist with, I believe, the same definition.
Well, no, on some of the definitions where it said that could be perceived, I put the word reasonably could be perceived, just to make it so that anything could be perceived. We could also add the dollar amount to each one of them, and then it has a lot more clear-cutness. But we'll do whatever the council so desires.
Okay. Robert?
Yeah. Danny, just to address your concern, I actually did a laborious comparison. It took me 2 hours between what your committee came up with and what they presented us. And they moved all the paragraphs around, which is what made it so laborious. There was really only one substantive difference. And it's the underlying text on the page they've given us here. There was one thing you guys had. And you should, it was sitting in front of each of us when we sat down. Yeah, this was really the only thing that I found different between the two versions, and they've now added it, which is basically to say, if you're a public official and you have a controlling interest in a company, that company can't be doing business with the city. More than $2,500, incidental business, etc. So by adding this, we can assume that what we have in front of us is what the task force created, except, the question that I've got for Danny is that he thinks this is too legalese, if this is too elaborate. You want to undertake finding a simple one? This is the best we got right now, because this is the only thing we got. And it's pretty complete, it's pretty comprehensive, and a citizen group created it, and that means a lot to me. But if we want to look at something else, I guess I'm open to it.
John, you also have to remember that it ties back to the reasonable man situation. And we're going to have a board, I guess nominated by us, confirmed by the mayor, of reasonable people to interpret this law for us. So I think it gets back to being reasonable and what's written and interpretation. And we're going to be the ones nominating who sits on this committee. I just want to make sure that that's pointed out. The reasonable man is who we appoint, or who the mayor appoints and who we nominate.
Okay, any other discussion on that? All right, we will move on. This one should be a lot easier. Alcohol.
Okay, I'll open it up.
Of proposed Chapter 4 alcohol beverages and ordinance to adopt and approve Chapter 4.
Let me just say the major change from the county is that it has been proposed by several council members and therefore incorporated, but I have not pulled them all, that we have a 2 o'clock bar closing instead of the current 3:50 bar.
Discussion.
As I understand it, in asking people that have asked the questions, and also one of the first people that spoke here tonight, this has not really been a problem. And we incorporated a mission statement, and that mission statement said this.
It said, the mission of Dunwoody is to provide the highest quality of life for those who live, work, and play in our community and to foster an environment where business can prosper. And I would hate for one of the first things that we to incorporate to do with business to be one that would infend some of the activities that are going on that are no problems today. This is consistent with DeKalb County, and from what I understand also, DeKalb County doing our vetting asked us the question, are we incorporating all their ordinances? And I think that it needs to be consistent if we're representing that we have an ordinance that's consistent. So I would be on the side of not changing anything this time, but we could change in the future if it becomes a problem.
Robert?
I won't be there at 4 o'clock in the morning, but there might be somebody out there that likes that hour.
You know, my own sense from the people who've talked to me is that the general character of Dunwoody is a place that is not a magnet for folks to come for late night drinking. That this is, that our constituents and our residents and our vision of Dunwoody is one that, you know, don't necessarily roll the sidewalks up at 11 p.m., but I don't know that we want to make this a destination for late night drinking. And it's true we haven't had any problems with the bars that are open there, but there are lots of places where people can go to drink late. I don't know that we need it to be in Dunwoody. I'm not sure that fits our character. Although the other side of that is that there have been an enormous number of people who've been trying for years and years to roll back countywide the drinking time. And I think historically Dunwoody has been in favor of rolling up the drinking time, but the CEO has stymied that, and I think they're now trying to get around the prohibition. And I think the county is working on a 2:30 closing time that's going to be done without requiring the CEO to have a voice. So I think there's an enormous consensus that 4 a.m. is just too late. But, you know.
Okay. Tom?
No, yes. A couple of legal questions. If we were to grandfather in the two establishments that we're talking about, would that set a precedent for people being approved later on? That we'd have to approve them. And the other thing is, if we did do that, how difficult is it to roll back from a legal standpoint?
Well, first of all, you need to start from the perspective that alcohol licensing is a privilege and not a right. There's no grandfathered rights in any of it. And just as there's no right to have a renewal at this point in time, as it's been pointed that that might be something you wanted to have. So the answer, the simple answer is, you can set it at any time you want to, at any time you want to. That's the simple answer. The more complicated answer, however, I have no opinion one way or the other, but one of the things I feel I need to do is tell you scenarios that do occur so you can make your decisions based on that. In Johns Creek, they determined they didn't wish to rolled back the time to 4 o'clock, from 4 o'clock in the initial determination. 2 years in the changed alcohol ordinance that's being prepared right now, they're looking at rolling it back to 2 o'clock. Now they have had two more bars open up, open till 4 o'clock in the morning. And the adjacent jurisdictions do not have them, and there might be a test fight on whether or not they're going to try to fight the rollback to 2 o'clock. They may or may not. Sandy Springs, when the police department did an analysis of where the problems were coming, Buckhead was closing at 2. They were driving straight up Roswell Road to Sandy Springs. The bars were filling up about 2:30 till about 4 o'clock in the morning. The police determined that there were innumerable stops between 2 and 4, and they came back, and they changed the closing time to 2 o'clock, and they're presently in a lawsuit with three of the establishments that eventually closed up that catered only till 4 a.m. closing. So if you make a determination at this point in time that you want to delay it to a date later time, you may not be in any better position and you may be in a worse position at that point in time. But it's simply a matter of what you want to do. In Johns Creek, there more clubs came in to open up it to the staff until 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Did that answer our question in the sense of grandfathering?
There is no grandfather.
There is no grandfathering.
There's no grandfathering to be had because it is not. There is no right. If I may, on the renewal process, I would suggest to you that you not do an initial renewal. What we found previously is that in going through a bunch of the liquor licenses, that we have found that there had been substantial changes in ownership in some instances. They didn't have that had never been reviewed. The licensure had not been completely vetted, and so this is your one opportunity to go ahead and vet all the licensees that you have in the city and verify that they're correct, and have the background checks that you want to have for anybody who runs any.
Is that the vetting process is not anything to do with the hourly operations?
No, sir. But that's another piece in there that we had public comment from tonight on on doing a renewal process rather than a brand new process. The argument in renewal is that there's some kind of grandfather or some kind of right, and we always take the position that alcohol is a privilege. And we fight very hard for that as a part of your process, because at some point in time that there're going to be people who should not get licenses or should not have their licenses remain, and we don't want to ever set up a situation so that somebody might come in and claim some vested right in an alcohol license, and that's one of the reasons we start off with, we're the new sheriff in town, you have to come through, you have to be vetted, we make our singular determination, you didn't have any vested rights in your licensure beforehand.
Is there any reason we couldn't do that, since we know we want to, or at least the initial thought is we want to get those fees, and to try to vet them internally is going to be a process I can't see us handling with the time frame that those things are supposed to go out.
What I would propose that you do, and this is what's been done previously, is they make their application. We give all of them temporary licensure until such time as the vetting finishes. This is what happened in Sand Springs. This is what happened in Johns Creek. They all had the same issue, and they got to start up even shorter than we had. They had a run up starting in November 6th.
3 weeks.
And so what I would propose is that we would go ahead and send out the applications, and it was a privatized process of the vetting in those areas, and I'm sure that now you got me. Not after you started, General. But we could go ahead and send out the application. We could have a private firm that could go ahead and do the vetting process for us, do the licensure, do the fingerprint, and issue all the. We can go ahead and issue all the. We'll issue temporary licenses. I always anticipated we'd issue temporary licenses on December 31st to everybody, because we won't be through with that process going forward, and we'll carry that license up probably till about the end of February. It'd all be finished.
Tom? Yeah. I guess, philosophically, you just want to, at the end of the day, do we want to become a destination when all the surrounding municipalities and the rest of DeKalb County are closing at 2 or 2:30 if DeKalb passes that ordinance? Do you want to become a destination for that or not? And, because if you leave it open, there's going to be more application, and I don't think you can just limit it to. If you establish that two of them can do it, I think you can establish that you can grow more of those.
Another discussion?
I agree completely in the sense of the becoming a destination, the variance of different hours. I even had the thought of making sure that our immediate neighbors we always matched theirs or lower when it comes to 2 o'clock. I would hate to ever have, you know, Doraville say 11 p.m. and then everybody start coming to us. I mean, I'd like to have reasonable hours where we're not the destination, but yet I don't want to hurt the community for these two businesses that are open later. If there was a way to work it out and they're not a problem, I'd like to try to find a solution. But again, I don't want them to be a destination either.
Where are those two businesses located? One's in front.
One's at the right by Walmart, right. Walmart Park. Yes. And the other one is, you know where the Bank of America and Burger King are by Georgetown?
Uh-huh.
It's right behind there. The road that runs in between the Bank of America and Shalford, that loop back there behind the apartments. There's the new apartments.
Right. I mean, we're going to be promoting tourism, we're going to be promoting conventions, and a lot of things are going to be happening in that general area there. And I don't know. I think people haven't opened up those two or three people that coming into Johns Creek. They haven't opened those establishments because Johns Creek's a city. They found it's a pretty good place to do business. And
I'll make one suggestion, Dan. If you really want to see what the 4 o'clock clubs in the camp look like, there's one right over by Shamley Tucker and 285. Mm-hmm. Go there Saturday night at about 3:45 in the morning, and you get an idea of what's going on.
But my point is that they could be. We could have 20 of those things in Dunwoody right now. There are only two that have opened up here, and I don't see that becoming a city.
Well, two licensed ones. Again, I can take it to places that are unlicensed right now.
In Dunwoody?
In Dunwoody.
Open until 4 o'clock.
Open John, until 4 or 5.
Is there different licensing fees for a 2 o'clock license versus a 4 o'clock license?
Is there any reason not to have...
If you could have a 4 o'clock license of $10,000 or something that makes
it... There are limits on how much you are allowed to charge financially.
Okay.
But you can't do $10,000. There are limits how much you can actually charge for a license.
But then again,
you can't be arbitrary then on who you grant licenses to.
And I'm just...
Question for counsel, the lawyer counsel. How do other municipalities on the dance clubs, is that alcohol related or a different ordinance where you can't serve if you dance? Is that in the liquor ordinance? Or?
That'll be a sexually oriented business ordinance. That's the one that we will bring the gentleman from Chattanooga to put in. And you'll read about this much documentation and you want to hide it from your children.
Well, there's stuff in here that you want
to hide. Okay.
It does tie into your alcohol ordinance, but it is a separate ordinance that will be passed.
Okay, Robert.
I'd make a suggestion of email. I don't know. I didn't get any feedback from anybody else. I'm not often in agreement with Bob Barr on things, but I do occasionally feel a little bit like a libertarian. And one of the things that has always struck me as being silly is the separate ordinances for Sunday alcohol. I would be just as comfortable if we, if we treated Sunday like we treated the rest of the week. And there are limits that Georgia places on Sunday alcohol that are pretty restrictive. And I would encourage us to take out the references, except for the reference that says that we'll follow the state of Georgia's restrictions on Sunday alcohol. And leave it at that, so that if the legislature in its infinite wisdom decides to allow beer and wine sales on Sundays in grocery stores, then the grocery stores in Dunwoody will be able to serve beer and wine to sell beer and wine on Sundays. So just as something to think about, I think this would be a cleaner ordinance with just the reference to the state, without our own individual repeated references to Salem Sunday. There is one financial consideration, and that is that many municipalities charge more for a special events license for liquor on Sunday than they would on a Saturday. So you got to get a special license, and they have a separate fee for Sunday that's higher than Saturday. But I don't know that we're going to make or break our budget on the difference between those two things.
Okay, any discussion on Robert B? Any other further discussion on that?
I just want to add one thing. You know, we make the decisions here, and I am well aware of that, and it doesn't bother me at all. But, you know, I just wonder, in this case, you know, maybe we all ought to go out to our constituents and get that feedback maybe here and bring it here. I think that might be an important input, you know. Citizens get an input, yeah. And I think that may be something we want to bring to the next meeting. What we feel, you know, the constituents in our district, our city, you know, actually feel, because this is a you know, a hot topic item. You know, it's without a doubt, and I can see both sides of the fence. And you know, I personally go to bed before 4 o'clock, so I'm not I won't be up there. But if you're the only one that's doing it, you're going to invite some folks in the town. That, yes, a lot of them are great people. Some of them may not be the greatest people. So you take that chance. And is that what we are promoting in our community? I think that's a thing that we all have to consider here.
The other thing I might suggest is reach out to your fellow council folk from Sandy Springs or other, even DeKalb County, to get a feel on what they've dealt with in the past. Because this is something that, Sandy Springs being newer, but as Robert mentioned, DeKalb has been going through their own set of circumstances. May be similar, may not. You might find parallels, but that may be another reach out that everyone can do. Any other discussion on that?
We have to pass this thing very shortly, though, because
research
bill. We don't have a lot of time for looking at
your
correct. Although, just one thing to note, the real meat is in the fee structure, right? It's in the, you know, this kid keeps referring to, you know, a structure that's outlined by resolution of the city. And getting that done is got to be right behind this.
Fee structure.
They have, they've got their fee structure on a couple page here. That kind of outlines their fees. We can mimic it if we so desire.
Yeah. Any other discussion?
Okay. I'm going to move for an executive session to discuss personnel issues.
Before we go, I'd just like to make one more statement on the fee structure. That just touched off something with me. You know, doing business with, we want to make Dunwoody a place where people want to do business. And I think one of the things, good night, Dick, one of the things you got to always say is that, you know, we want to make sure that we aren't changing our fee structure than our neighbors. I think that's one of the things we need to take a good look at, you know, when we set a fee structure on this, is to make sure that we are not out here overcharging or charging more than our neighbors, so that, you know, a person running a very good bar, and I happen to go to bars once in a while, is not put at a disadvantage over someone who lives, a bar owner in Sandy Springs or Johns Creek or Doraville.
Okay, that's a good point. I think fee structure is going to be down the line, as Robert said, quickly, soon after, those are well to the wise. Again, I'm going to break for executive session. I'm going to ask.
Move.
I'm sorry.
No.
Move. I'm moving for executive session.
Second.
Any opposed? All right, we're going to move to executive session. I'm going to ask council to exit the room as well, because we're going to discuss here. Yeah.